Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight. As usual, this time of the day, it's your drive time duo here on your favorite radio station, your favorite show, keeping you company from 4 o'clock darts until 7. And today we are back again to with another very sciencey discussion, but we are not going to be talking about CERN and splitting atoms, but we're just looking at it from the current consultations being held on the nuclear bill. How do you explain nuclear energy in general? Just nuclear energy in general, or before you even get to nuclear, if you have to explain the word nuclear. Mm. Now, you're one of the, you're one of the people that are holding these consultations. Mm. And you're at a place where, some of the people don't speak English.
Yeah.
So you need an interpreter. You know, they're really genuine. They want to get the information that's being presented during the presentation.
Yeah.
Now, one question, that's what I kept asking myself, if I was one of these people that are doing this consultation, how would I explain, we're at Divundu now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you have, Mbukushu somewhere in and they are very proud that one of their own is doing the presentation in English. The thing is, how do you break it down, like nuclear, in a way that is very digestible to someone that that is not exposed to the, to the basic science that basically that you and I were exposed all the way through to high school.
Okay. Let me also be honest, Ahmed. I was not exposed to the same level of basic science as well. In many cases, it happened accidentally, either through watching a movie, watching a documentary.
Yeah.
Trying to understand the basics of something without pursuing the subject at school, because probably the teacher probably was just, undeniably boring. And, I mean, we were all teenagers. That's what we all thought.
I think I was lucky to, I was lucky to have, two teachers.
Yeah.
That were very, let me just say, actually three.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were good at two things.
Yeah.
Supporting Nami Breweries and teaching science. And they were very good. During the weekends, don't bother those guys with anything.
12 minutes in, and we already begin. But that is true. I'm also guilty for it. Yeah.
Yeah. One of my science teacher actually went to school at the very same school same school that I went to, and after he graduated, he came back to start teaching at that school. Then he became my science teacher.
Yeah.
Now, when I tell you this guy is a brainiac, he really is a brainiac. They didn't have, they were doing IGCSE when he was at school.
Yeah.
They didn't have a math teacher. They didn't have a math teacher. Bro went through high school with A+
yeah.
in math. They didn't have the math teacher the whole year.
Yeah.
Now, so I think
which is which is a regular thing in Namibian schools.
Yeah, I think so.
No.
So as you can imagine, for some reason, I think people with that level of mental acuity, if I can call it that,
yeah.
have some degree of eccentricity to them. So when I say he supports Nami Breweries, he's very good at that.
Mm.
But when he's in the class, basically breaking this down, he makes it very, very digestible. Now, for me, a teacher like that, and a little trying to escape from bullies, combine those two, and you become a little bit of a nerd. Now, the idea of the consultation is, of course, is to break down the knowledge to all Namibians, because at the end of the day, the main goal behind consultations is to get Namibians to make a decision on whether or not they support you on whatever it is that you want to implement.
Yeah.
But, I don't see how how I could support anyone who is, how I could go against an idea that I don't understand.
Well, here's the interesting thing, Helmut. So There is a, and it's not even the full draft itself, no? Because when I went to record the thing.
So it's just a partial draft.
It's literally just three words. Three pages. But it just explains to you what will be under each section. And then if you were present at the stakeholder engagement, where Mr. Axel Tibanyane from the Radiation Authority was presenting. Now, Namibians would now ask me, what is the Radiation Authority, Dwight? Well, the Radiation Authority is one of those it has an act. It has an act, the Radiation Authority.
Yeah, I know.
It's the act that has to be repealed, this particular act.
That has been repealed, but the last time I remember that when they said that something was missing from the old acts, so they had to do a little bit of they had to split it to make its own act back in 1994.
Yeah. Primarily because it's based upon radiation equipment, for example, like the things that you find in your hospitals, like scanning machines, actually all medical scanning machines, and even the equipment needed to respond, for example, if any of the uranium mining facilities in the country potentially has some sort of a
leakage.
Not leakage, because you can't say leakage. I mean, a rock doesn't leak anything.
Mm-hmm.
A uranium rock. Yeah. It doesn't leak anything. It's just the rock itself
is radioactive.
So it's probably just about how to potentially treat overexposure and stuff like that. Yeah. But
mentioned in the presentation.
Yeah, because exposure, but there's also guidelines to how they then respond to that. Now, the Radiation Authority, the current one, that Mr. Tibanyane is from. He was the guy presenting and answering questions and giving clarity and engaging with the members of the public back in last week. Mr. Tibanyane's role specifically was that he's then also there not just to present, but basically to be that localized, immediate, interactable resource for the public. Him to make it easier for the public who's now sitting there in that public engagement to try and understand what's going on.
Yeah.
Now, there was a notice sent out back then, back in June about the start of these public engagements. Now, Helmut, I just want to read for the listeners, the particular aims of this bill, just so that you guys know actually what is the aim. One of the aims is the repealing of an existing piece of legislation and thus technically modernize what is there, what will be brought in. So just to explain it to you, the nuclear bill, this is to establish the nuclear commission. This is one of the first aim and to provide for its powers and its functions. So it's another entity, but this is technically how I see it since it replaces if it repeals the current act, which houses the Radiation Authority, this means potentially the Radiation Authority's name changes to the Nuclear Commission, and also to establish the Nuclear Institute of Namibia to promote and develop the peaceful uses of nuclear applications and technologies. So this technically also means that the commission becomes an umbrella organization. Versus what you see in Namibia, you've got the Ministry of Health and there's Radiation Authority as the two particular lead agencies for anything nuclear. So we're not even talking about energy production yet, guys.
Just in the general use.
We're just talking about a broad spectrum of whatever is used in nuclear. So until this nuclear bill is established, possibly, Ministry of Mines and Energy would have to then respond in terms of updating their relevant legislation regarding potential, energy generation energy generation from a nuclear fuel source. Because the question was raised at, and you heard from that other journalist about the Minerals Act. Why can't the Minerals Act become like the over-encompassing act and then you know, while this nuclear bill is also being developed. And then Mr. Tibaniana said, listen, okay, so it's basically two different things. The Minerals Act potentially speaks about the activity of mining.
Yeah.
Whereas the nuclear bill is you are now with the resource after it has extracted.
Yeah.
The resource now.
But its uses.
Yeah. Now we're looking at where it will be used. Not you are mining the thing there.
That would be a lot to cover from where it's mined to where it's.
Here's the thing, Helmut. But the name of the Minerals Act doesn't speak to nuclear.
Strictly,
and
but yeah, look, but yeah, that is true because if you look at Minerals Act, for the most part, you know,
it's everything.
Yeah, it's like the difference basically between the International Energy Agency and the International Atomic Energy Agency. Yeah,
where
International Energy Agency is everything: energy, water,
yeah.
Coal.
But it's not UN affiliated.
Yeah. No.
That's the sad part. It's not UN affiliated. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Minerals Act basically comes to you and says everything that is there.
As long as it's a mineral.
Yeah.
Diamonds, gold.
Yeah.
You know, all the rare earth metals that we're talking about. Just throw them in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But here's the other sort of like the misunderstanding and the gap. Because the question that was asked by the fellow journalist in the audience was basically, why don't you just empower existing legislation, update that legislation to include this nuclear dimension? But like we're now already satisfied,
yeah.
Firstly, it's two different uses that we're looking at. And even the International Atomic Energy Agency, like Helmut mentioned right now,
yeah.
Which is UN affiliated. Let me state that again, guys. The IAEA is UN affiliated. The IAEA is also possibly partially responsible for the current conflict, for the block plus block equals unblock scenario.
Yeah.
They are also partially responsible for what began last year and has cascaded into this year.
Yeah.
With the first 7 or 8 day war that between Iran, Israel and the US back then. So, the IAEA is the other guys that respond or report directly to the UN Security Council. Now, last year we also discovered, remember that announcement at the end of last year of the November nuclear and radioactive testing exercise that has to take place end of this year?
Yeah.
That, Helmut, is a different UN agency. It's a treaty. It's actually a treaty.
Yeah.
It's the oldest nuclear treaty. It's older than the UN itself because it was actually started just before the UN was formalized and it was sort of like quickly, you know, assimilated into the UN structures to say, okay, now you're part of the UN. Both of them and the IAEA operate out of Vienna, out of Switzerland, Geneva. No, the IAEA is in Austria because I know we've got an embassy in Austria. And this treaty, this atomic treaty, they are based in Switzerland, Geneva. So, but the IAEA one is the one that, the IAEA reports directly to the UN Security Council, meaning to those five permanent countries.
Yeah.
Whereas this UN,
the head of the UN.
Whereas this atomic treaty organization, they just report to the UN. They have their own discussion structures, everything, founding documents, founding pledges and what. But they are the guys that technically help you with how to respond in a nuclear event or
yeah.
in a radiation leakage event. And they're the guys that are gonna, Namibia has to conduct the exercise with end of this year. The IAEA then is technically the guy who's guidance we are using to establish the nuclear bill, which has the model law, nuclear law handbook that guides countries, member countries. And Namibia is a member of the IAEA. If you are a member of the UN, predominantly you are by default a member of every other particular agency of the UN. Unless you clearly say, I don't want to be part of this cluster, you're by default just part of it. So there was a mouthful I quickly gave there, but I left out concluding on the point that the question that was asked about the Minerals and the Nuclear Act.
Yeah.
So, although Mr. Tibinyane didn't want to fully explain, in giving a direct answer to that fellow journalist's question about why not just empower the Minerals Act, the dimension that takes place when you cascade into looking at this discussion, you're stepping back, you're looking at this discussion. Now, obviously, just to read to you, Helmut, what's going to happen? Why is the nuclear bill coming? So I explained to you already, in NDP6, we know NDP6 is speaking about we need to harness the true potential of uranium.
Yeah.
So we know this. So that's our foundation direction for changing, amending, adopting, introducing new agencies and the likes, and potentially, yes, there might be new jobs for a whole bunch of you guys, because three organizations need to be established from this. Just as you know, there's employment. Employment, Helmut, magic word. Employment.
Yeah.
But
500,000 jobs.
Yeah, that's green hydrogen. That's green hydrogen.
Relax.
Green hydrogen is 400,000, remember? So, with the nuclear bill, the aim is to establish the commission, the Nuclear Commission of Namibia, then through the commission to establish the Nuclear Institute of Namibia, and then, as a sister organization to the institute to establish the Nuclear Regulatory Authority of Namibia. Now, since I'm just sitting here with a 3-page draft thing, it's just a shell document from the Ministry of Health's website, because that's where they told us to go in the notice that they had.
Yeah.
It basically just looks at the commission. Chapter one is obviously definitions and objections and objects of the act, meaning the direction and what is contained in the act. Chapter two is definitely just about the commission, entity number one. Chapter three basically is about finance of the commission, meaning where does it get its financing from, how reporting has to take place, how the funds that it gets has to be used, are there fees that are applicable, charges or levies to be applied, the run-of-the-mill administrative and operational things that needs to be outlined in the act on behalf of a thing. The person that will be in charge of this commission will be known as the Director General of the commission, and then also what kinds of powers will exist. Fun things that obviously came out, for example, out of like the ombudsman. The ombudsman report that Helmut and I, we really went to party with that report, because we love that report.
Telling you.
That report basically told us, okay, you say you have powers, but the act that governs SOEs says you have no discretionary powers, no matter your position or station.
They basically told me, yes, you have power. You do. Don't get me wrong. You do. But they're limited by this piece of the constitution.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can't just follow. You can't just go, you know what? Well, thank you very much for this power.
You can't be Harry Potter and imagine things, you know? This is not a make-believe world. You have to stick in your lane.
Really?
I think that's where that Afrikaans term comes from. Play in your ban. You know, stay in your lane. So, it's probably the best, most applicable thing. I'm sorry, Namra, but yeah, that's what that report says.
No, the Harry Potter
reference
was just diabolical.
You know, I had to slide it in.
Make it sound like our ministers are just walking around shouting, Expecto Patronus.
Abracadabra! Poof! Okay. But anyway, chapter three then flows into the Nuclear Institute and its particular establishment, a board, other operational things as well, just highlighting, what happens, how long people must be there, and ultimately what is the function of this institute. And then chapter four speaks about the radiation and nuclear regulatory authority of Namibia. Now, this is where things also get a little bit peculiar. Currently, right now, Helmut, let me just go back to this front page of the website of the Ministry of Health. Currently, right now, this is the authority, the yellow logo. That's the authority's name. The National... Okay, no, it's 100%. The National Radiation Authority of Namibia.
That's National Radiation Authority of Namibia.
Yeah. Then they are currently under Ministry of Health. Now, Mr. Tibinyane kept emphasizing during the Q&A session with the members of the public, guys, nuclear is just not about energy and electricity. There are a lot more uses of the thing in the economies around the world than what you think. It's not just about generating electricity. Yes, NDB6 speaks about also electricity or energy supply sovereignty or in one other dimension, but the dimension is primarily based upon, let's be as, let's make the scope as broad as possible to understand what we need to cover, where Namibia wants to go with the nuclear industry in its entirety, what Namibia can harness, what Namibia probably might have to build up to, and what bases do we first have to cover. Now, there's a difference between this thing that's digital format, that if you are not present in Windhoek or couldn't, you know, go to any of the other
where
particular
consultations are held.
Yeah, consultations. You only had this 4-page skeleton document. The thing, when I showed up, that some of the members of the audience were sitting with was a massive document this thick. So they already put in the potential meat pieces about the authority, about the commission,
the
about
that will be established,
functions, about potential economies, what economies, or let me not say economies, what sectors, what industrial purposes and applications, who, meaning functionaries to be governed and regulated, who they might be, who they might not be, scopes, under what purposes, so on and so forth. And potentially, if this bill replaces the old act, does it take the commission and the authority and the institute from out under the Ministry of Health? Under the Ministry of Health. Now, I'll add in an extra additional thing, Hamut. Back in 2024, was it 2024? Yeah, 2024. Yeah, back in 2024, when I went to Russia for the Atom Expo. At the Atom Expo, the most critical thing about the 2 days that I saw at the Atom Expo was the 3 days. 3 days at the Atom Expo. Because it was up until the Wednesday. The most important thing of the 3 days at the Atom Expo was the time that we Namibian journalists, because we were technically four from Namibia. We and the South Africans were the biggest contingent. We, the South Africans, I think, and the Senegalese guys, the guys that came late, they came like super late. They came like the Monday night after day one began at the Atom Expo. We were told right there at the Atom Expo, we did not know beforehand that Ministry of Agriculture was having a meeting with its Russian counterpart in Moscow.
Yeah.
But it was like a Africa to Russia thing. When we showed up at Sochi, because we had to fly from Moscow to Sochi, when we showed up at Sochi, we did not know that four or five of the Standing Committee on Natural Resources were already in Sochi. We did not know. It wasn't even announced on the Parliament WhatsApp group.
Usually they produce reports based on that. Where's that report, guys?
It's an interesting dimension. Where is that report? There wasn't a report. Because you and
it's
I
not
would've...
another Orange River old protocol.
Yes, you and I would have already had this discussion. We would have had this discussion. And lastly, we also just found out while we were there at the Atom Expo in Sochi that Minister of Health, former Minister of Health, Kalubi Shangula, was to speak at the Atom Expo for, nuclear, how nuclear sciences help, healthcare, specifically in the prevention and detection of cancers. So, a dimension like this, right? First and foremost, let's forego the discussion of the discoveries that me and the other three Namibians kept making
for the 3 days that we were at Sosh.
What discoveries were you making?
You know, the people we were bumping into, or that we were told, no, go talk here to a, here's your member of parliament. We're like, which member of parliament
which
is
member
here?
Of parliament?
Which member of parliament is here? And then they tell us. And they're like, it's a, but you guys didn't say on the WhatsApp group for the parliament that you guys are coming here. Or a dimension of obviously bumping into the discussion of like, you know, like, that the Minister of Health at the time was presenting at the platform for radiology and cancers and so on, from a health dimension.
Yeah.
So these discoveries obviously also caught us a little bit off guard. We had to react, obviously, as we always do as media, on the spot, have to improvise and do things. And then you sit with that from that particular scenario that I'm now explaining to you. You then look out towards between 2024 up to now 2026. Where do we see that particular role of Namibia, and Namibia knowing that it has uranium, but Namibia trying to now address certain particular, you know, immediate elements to then modernize itself? Because this is modernization. Modernization is also includes that you've got to update laws and systems to stay with the particular times.
Yeah.
I mean, I came just now, earlier today, from day three of this workshop that I'm attending, where I was now being convinced I have to do a TikTok short to explain to Gen Zs. But I sit there to myself thinking, Mar,
you need a TikTok account, dude.
No, I had to open up. I had to download the thing, and also like the video editor, because ByteDance, the company that owns TikTok, also has editing. It also has an editing software.
Yeah.
CapCut.
Yeah.
And CapCut helps to properly edit, because it's probably got, as I now went through the thing to see what it has, it's potentially more features than TikTok's own editing suite.
They're actually connected. There are templates that you find on TikTok that takes you back to CapCut for editing, and then bring them back to TikTok for uploading.
If you use CapCut to edit your stuff, then you just import directly into your TikTok account, instead of you just sitting there editing on your TikTok account primarily, and then you don't have access to the full functions and features. So Now you sit there thinking to yourself, Helmut, they've realized under Gen Z's, literacy rates are declining.
Yeah.
Participation, like we've already established. Now, I'm coming from a workshop where I'm being told, there's no scientific evidence. I'm being told the Gen Z's, they get all the information from the social media platforms without reading anything. Now, literacy rates are declining. One of the fellow workshop attendees told us a story there in one of the sections or chapters of the workshop that younger generations, because it was a nephew of hers, missed an exam to improve his grade 12 marks, which are almost now the AS levels.
Yeah.
And she now had to give him a pep talk. Now, when you look at things like this, indicators, signals of the up-and-coming generations that have to take over and lead Namibia into the future.
Yeah.
Very few of them were present, Helmut, on Friday last week at that public engagement. I could count the people that were younger than me and you in that hall. Yes, many of them would be younger than me if they are between the age of 30 to 40.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them are in that bracket. But I said, that's many of them. There were very few of them below 30 downwards.
And that basically proves Afrobarometer's world research very true. Young people, especially those under the age bracket of 15 to 34, rarely participate in things like public discourse, like take your consultations and public engagements, for example. Yeah. And again, what one thing that shocked me when I looked at those statistics, which you can find on the Afrobarometer website, is that the age bracket of 36 and above.
Yeah.
Yeah. They dominate, you know, they dominate, basically, engagements in everything of political and basically everything of national interest in terms of discussions and participation, be it elections or consultations.
Mm.
The age bracket of 36 and above, they dominated, the age bracket of 34 to 15 in everything from election, attending, public discussions. But when it came to, protesting, all of a sudden, my age bracket now was topping the chart again for the millionth time. And I'm going to keep asking this question. If you are not taking, if you are not attending stakeholder engagements, mm-hmm. clearly, we have no clue what's going on.
Yeah.
My question is, when we are protesting, do we really know what we are protesting about?
Yeah. Now, when we are unhappy, do we know what we're unhappy about?
Yeah. Okay. I think, you know, if you look at the nuclear bill, for someone that is fascinated by both science and, by both science and everything legal, One thing that I find interesting here is the layout as you just drew it. Yeah, because in all these pieces of legislation, if it's an act of parliament, the first section is always going to be definitions, because they are defining when they say commission, what they mean when they say a minister, what they mean when they say, take for example, if it's your fisheries act, when they say fisheries or fishing. What do they mean? Because it's basically, now section one is basically a dictionary explaining to you the terminologies, the most important terminologies that are going to be used.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when it explains, just to let the people know, it's definitions that are just contained to that.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Not anything else, not your dictionary. Yeah. You don't have to agree with. They are just explaining to you when we say minister in this act, this is what we mean.
Yes.
Now, when it comes to the establishment of, establishment of boards, establishment of the relevant, boards and commissions, this is something that is, that you'll see all across, acts of parliament, which is also, very fascinating. Now, just look at it from an administrative, and again, you don't have to be a rocket scientist or a legal expert to understand that. Administrative activities of running a country is very cumbersome. Now, you have to figure out a way to spread the responsibility so that you don't have to, to summon the minister for everything or call the state house for everything.
Division of labor.
Exactly. It's a division of labor at its finest when you look at it, especially when it comes to the establishment of boards and and their relevant commissions. Now I'll just give you three examples that I managed to put together here. Now, the Atomic Energy and Radiation Protection Act 5 of 2005, that's the one that has established the National Radiation Protection Authority. So this is basically saying, we don't have to run to parliament to try and find out, or to the Minister of Health to try and find out, how can we do this? So, if there's something that has to be executed for easy administrative purpose or for easy, execution of activities purposes, then this board basically have the authority to carry out both administrative and executive type of type of responsibilities with everything radioactive. Hang on a second. Now that we're talking about it, doesn't this include your microwave?
Yes, Elmo.
Huh.
Not just your microwave. There's another device.
Your cell phone too.
Yes, your cell phone, which is critical, which brings us back to yesterday's discussion about critical rare and the rare earth minerals. And that dimension of yesterday, now, guys, also, it basically helps the nuclear industry as well.
Yeah.
Because it also technically means what potential technologies Namibia can also manufacture. That's if Namibia gets to that phase. That's if we get to that phase.
So, baby steps.
Don't say
chameleon.
I was going to say embryonic, because baby means that it was already born. embryonic is still, it's just,
it's still just being
in
formed.
Conception, my conception phase.
Yeah. Now your Atomic Energy and Radiation Protection Act establishes the National Radiation Protection Authority.
Yeah.
And now, and you
that's
have.
That's where Tibinyane is from.
That's where he's from.
That's where he's from.
Yeah. And you have, now, your Marine Resources Act is the one that establishes your, this one also management, now, it shall be the management board here that is the one that established your, what's that?
The Fisheries Observer.
Exactly, that Fisheries Observer discussion that we had.
But Fisheries Observers has its, has another act, Helmut. Remember, they were as an SOE, they have a weird origin story.
The Fisheries Observer.
Yeah. Agency. I just want to get it because when we discussed it then, I read about them.
Yeah.
They were first begun. They were like that South African agency that I mentioned, the one about the responsible gambling one, who was first started, and then the act was then adjusted.
Section 7.
Was then adjusted to them. Section 7. There shall be fisheries observers who shall be appointed by the agency. Yes.
That's your fisheries act.
Yeah. They were put in the Marine Resources Act of 2000. Because if you go look at the origins on the website of the Fisheries Observer, meaning, where's that about us? Who we are. They explained there primarily.
That's my favorite part, who we are.
They existed following a number of consultations and the replacement of the Fisheries Act with the Marine Resources Act. Mm-hmm. So the Marine Resources replaced the Fisheries Act.
Yeah.
And the Observer Agency was established and started in May of 2002. Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. It was another act and then they came into being. So yeah. So just to correct myself, yes, it's not that the Fisheries Observers began before, but measurement of the resource was being done already since prior Namibia's independence. That's how the local environmental researchers told us in 2024 about the, what's the thing's name? About the pilchard stock depletion that the South Africans did in the 70s and the 80s.
Yeah.
They overfished our pilchard stocks. Because they had depleted their stocks as well. And pilchard is a deep sea small fish, no?
Yeah.
Or is it a shallow water small fish?
I don't think it's shallow water if it's Namibian, Atlantic side of Namibia, because that part is deep.
Deep, yeah. Because it should be deep. But yeah, so that's ultimately what we see. But you were still saying, Helmut,
On the establishment of boards.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was fascinated by the point that you made earlier that if they have to take, for example, separate the Atomic Energy and Radiation Protection from the Ministry of Health, or more like if they have to amend that one, or more like revamp it to fit to become sort of like the new nuclear bill.
Yeah.
How would that happen? Now, what will happen to the what will happen to the board that is currently overseeing everything radioactive?
Yes.
Do
they become the commission?
Exactly.
Do they become the new authority?
Yeah.
Or are some of them
going? Which to is most likely going to be if they adopt that one?
Basically, yes. Because the commission in the presentation that took place speaks about a specific board being appointed, a board that has.
So that will be a new one that will come with this act.
Yeah.
Actually, with this bill, that would be interesting. Man, the lingo.
But here's the thing there. Here's the thing.
Yeah.
There's nothing we can show from these four pages.
Yeah.
Because you and I, we had to listen to the recording that I had to make.
Yeah.
And what Mr. Tibinyane explained there specifically is that the board itself will be dominated by scientists. And then one commissioner has to be from a legal perspective.
Yeah.
And a second one has to be from another technical perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Just to meet the compliance measures specifically, looking at things like impact on other laws in Namibia and impact on other sectors and so on and so forth. And then that extra commissioner will have a different dimension or different expertise to contribute. And obviously there'll be the security cluster contribution as well, because security guys, just like in the Space Science Council,
It's the same representation. One guy must be assigned, or two guys must be assigned, must be scientists. One board member of that council, one council member is a legal representative. One is an ICT representative. Another one is an engineering representative. And the last one is a security cluster. But two guys out of that Space Science Council, for example, there are actual scientists. The other people are not scientists.
We're literally talking about science on an atomic level. So you will need scientists to
be. Now, with this commission, I think it's like three or four people that have to be scientists, like nuclear scientists.
Yeah.
They have to be appointed on proficiency of the subject matter.
Yeah.
And expertise. Now, I've met so far two nuclear physicists in Namibia.
Just two.
The guy that I wanted to interview about the nuclear use thing that happened in Rwanda, remember? 2 months back. That guy can now no longer speak to me because at the time that he was in Rwanda, he was busy signing an agreement with another
non-disclosure agreement.
With an extractive industry company here in Windhoek. So now after he came back, homeboy can't talk to me because he said, no, Dwight, as per my terms of my employment contract, unfortunately, you'll have to drop that avenue. But he was the only Namibian that was at the Rwanda event specifically, where they had like a nuclear conference thing, an African nuclear conference thing there in Rwanda, in Kigali, Rwanda.
Yeah.
And he was the only Namibian, which makes things a little bit disappointing. Which also shows you, we technically need more people participating in some of these scientific developments, because if one guy goes and gets a sensitive employment contract somewhere,
then you're cooked.
And you really need information. Or you just need to put a voice to the information.
You know what that picture draws for me? The picture of the gentleman that you had an agreement to have an interview with, but after his trip from Rwanda, he, you know, had
to... And it was like a week. He was there for 5 days. He said yes.
A lot
while
can
he was
happen
there.
In 5 days. Too.
He said yes, but let me check, Dwight. I'm currently negotiating something. I was like, okay, I don't understand. What are you negotiating? And then coming back, I find him at the event. And then I was like, bruh, is this what you look like? He said, yeah, Dwight, I was just keeping silent. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I realized the person I was talking to him about is his boss.
Oh.
And his boss said, oh, that's the guy that you're talking about, Dwight. I'm like, oh, okay, sorry, man.
Okay, I met one gentleman that worked for the, you know, that worked for the office of the Prime Minister, and I pointed out something interesting in terms of the scramble for, you know, for top-notch knowledge in a lot of things, especially in technical expertise. Mm. One thing that he pointed out was that, the Office of the Prime Minister always puts aside budget to basically train their IT, you know, their IT crew.
Mm.
Yeah. They will send them to acquire certain knowledge that's needed by their office to run, as you can imagine, a lot of things from administration to security.
Mm.
But the thing is, after they acquire this expertise, a bunch of private companies come hunting for these newly upgraded guys.
Professional.
And these guys are coming with offers they can't refuse.
Yeah.
And they don't have any type of sort of like, more like legal chains to tie them that, you know what, we trained you, so you're going to have to stay here.
Yeah.
So, about the beginning of this year. So now, he pointed out to me that the problem that they have so far is, they have, a shortage of knowledge in one department, but one that he mentioned specifically was the IT department.
Yeah.
They would just select, one or two or maybe a few that has that potential, send them to different institutions to be trained in that particular knowledge. But as soon as they come back, they have, offers flowing left, right, and center from the private sector. And in less than, 3 months or to a year, they're all gone. So now, it's like trying to fill a cup that is, that doesn't have a bottom.
Yeah.
So you can run your tap as much as you can, but
well, that thing just doesn't stop.
Now, just look at it this way. I'm pointing that out because we are talking about an act. That means we are talking about you are basically talking about a government agency. So it's a public sector.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, that means, all the expertise that are required to participate in this type of technology technology that is so demanding in terms of technical expertise. We are talking about, looking at atoms on an atomic level. So.
And regulating them on that level.
Regulating them on that level. We failed. Well, to bring in force,
okay.
An act. We failed to bring in force, not we, point of correction, he, the Minister of Agriculture, failed. Oh. You know, I'm not taking responsibility for this. Now, something as simple as that. Now, imagine nuclear science.
Okay. What's the funny thing there? A legal expert presented that exact analysis. So, where she said, you know, we bring in, and she's talking about the Water Management Act.
Yeah.
She says, so we bring in an act, and for 10 years, the thing is dormant. And then I explained to her the thing was made active that year that a certain activity had to happen, and now suddenly people had to comply. And people were now asking questions, okay, so you, the ministry, if you're also drilling boreholes for rural communities, are you applying to your own application office for your own drilling, for your own borehole application, and do you pay it as well? Or are you playing, you know, ref, goalkeeper, striker, defender, and midfielder at the same time?
Sounds like an Egyptian Argentina match.
No, but, it sounds more like a Argentina, Egypt, England,
Spain,
and the Spain match. Yeah, it sounds like all three rolled into one.
Yeah. So. The direction this whole thing is headed in terms of consultation is a brilliant idea, but one thing that we have at least noticed, if I'm pretty sure, you know, I mean, the only one that I was exposed to in terms of people's not just the. Let me just say, I don't want to say lack of interest, but, confusion with regards to what this whole thing is about. That's why I started with the language being used in this interpretation. And by that, by language, I don't mean the literal language as in, I'm speaking English. I'm doing this consultation in English to someone that understands just basic English. Now, if someone only understands basic English compared to the English that I'm speaking, that means when you bring in the science aspect, that's a whole different branch of English.
Yes.
Is the reason why I can't read a doctor's handwriting, because that's a whole different type of, that's a medical type of, medical type of English.
Can you read my handwriting, Hamad?
No, I can't.
Okay. I'm not a doctor, guys.
Look, cursive, I...
Although my...
Cursive is an art.
My first two initials might say doctor. I'm not a doctor.
Yeah. Now, that's why I want to emphasize on the communication of this knowledge, because when we talk about nuclear, I think nuclear energy has been given a bad name. And now you and I know how much the International Atomic Energy Agency had to fight tooth and nail to get the world to understand that one of the most renewable, but very clean source of energy that we are abandoning in our energy transition is nuclear energy. It's been tested and tried. It's reliable as heck.
Do you remember the example that Mr. Tipanyani used during the presentation, the one about the inadequate storage and the one in Brazil?
Yeah.
They made a movie about that event. I looked it up, and back in the 80s, for the listeners, it's known as the Guyana incident. It's when a bunch of like these guys that live on the streets that we sometimes see scrounging through the
trash cans.
Yeah, the trash cans before, you know, on the day that people, that the households take out the trash cans every day in the week. It was guys like that who went to go and scrounge through an abandoned hospital in one of Brazil's provinces. And the hospital had abandoned radiology equipment. And these guys just opened up the equipment, took out the things. They thought it looked nice.
Oh, no.
And then this thing's, the radiation, because they walked through the town with this exposure and exposed material.
Yeah.
They walked through the whole town had to be locked down. Okay, according to Mr. Tabiniana, they literally had to demolish a large segment of the town when they quarantined the town. But they had to demolish a large section of the town as well to try and, you know, deal with the radioactivity element. And it's incidences obviously like this that feed into the point that you made about the negative publicity, the negative reputation that nuclear or the handling of nuclear materials has.
Yeah.
Or even when people hear this, just the single word nuclear, people immediately jump to, oh,
Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Even Fukushima recently,
yeah,
2011. Fukushima. And in that scenario also, Japanese fishermen are still unhappy with the Japanese government. Because the Japanese government and its monitoring agencies for radioactive incidents, radiation incidents, in line with the IAEA people, because the IAEA keeps saying, Mariano Grossi keeps saying, no, there's no, you know, excessive radiation exposure at Fukushima anymore. The town is technically declared as being okay. But the people on the ground, the fishermen, will tell you, yeah, you know, we are catching weird kinds of fish from the sea. And the downside is you're supposed to have like a quarantine also, like a no sailing zone on the sea as well, Helmut. Now, unfortunately, you can't do anything if a fish swims into that no sailing zone and swims out, because the fish does not know that there was a radioactive leak. The fish doesn't know that. But the fish swims in, the fish swims out, the fish then starts laying eggs, the fish then produces probably, you know, a hulkerized format of a new fish species.
Hulkerized.
Although Hulk is not the same as nuclear radiation, guys.
Yeah.
Hulk suffered from gamma radiation. That's a different kind of a radiation. So just so that you know, gamma rays come from a different source. But yeah.
Yeah.
The pun was intended.
Yeah. Look, the exposure, of course, is one that becomes very important when it comes to regulation, because when you are regulating the institutions that are using everything radioactive, you see that the regulation will ensure that mostly the acquisition of the material.
Yeah.
And the use and exposure. You're looking at three main stages. How this material is acquired, how it's used, and how it's exposed.
Yeah.
Take for example, you can't toss the radioactive material in the very same way that you toss your, you know, a trash can.
Yeah.
Because if you have a landfill of radioactive material, you have a Chernobyl on your hands. And the terrible thing about radiation is, take for example something that is made out of organic material, like which is more often carbon.
Yeah.
It's like a dead animal, for example. It's gonna break down, it's gonna decompose, but in a week, maybe a month, you know, it's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, but radiation, that thing is stuck there depending on the element that you are dealing with for 1,000 years and more. So that means
10,000 maximum.
You make a mistake today, 10,000 years from now, the people that
will
be. The
mistake is still there.
The mistake is still there.
Yeah.
The people will still be getting cancer from the mistake you made 10,000 years back.
Yeah.
So that's why the regulation is a very important aspect. And I'm glad we're basically starting from there. Before you start saying, okay, you know what, are we going with the traditional nuclear reactor in terms of energy generation or a modular?
Yeah.
Now, one funny thing coming out of mostly Europe There's a black type of fungi that has been identified in some parts of Chernobyl that is supposedly eating, you know, radioactive material. And maybe could be, you know, some kind of a solution to the, you know, to the radioactive contamination of the, you know, of that particular, of that part of Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
Now, and I agree with critics of that point of view, because you have to understand, if you think of it this way, think of it as, you know, as a poison, you know, a rat poison being everywhere and it's being eaten by rats. And you think that, you know what, this is a brilliant idea because that poison that we're worrying about, rats are eating that, you know, rats are eating that poison.
Yeah.
You know what, that rat has a predator that's going to eat that rat. And that predator has a predator. You see where I'm going with this? At the end of the day, you are going to, you know, this contamination is going to spread all across the food chain, and it always comes down to who? Us.
Yeah.
Now, one of the biggest selling point in the you know in the culinary you know world, especially when it comes to seafood, is that you'll have a lot of these labels in the very same way that you have pretty much you know a bunch of food in your grocery store saying you know fat free this, fat free that, fat free this. In the fishing world, in the culinary world of fishing, the most abused term is deep sea caught. In other words, we caught this fish very far away from the waters we polluted,
so that you
in other words
don't have to worry.
Yeah, you don't have to worry. We can just charge you this ridiculous amount of money for this fish, and it's ridiculous. I mean, and we keep preaching prevention is better than cure. So if you ask me, you know, we are very tiny speck in the world of nuclear in terms of its uses, but in terms of production, we come in third from Canada and Kazakhstan. And one thing I found interesting, I found that Canada has 4 nuclear power plants, and they generate about 15% of their energy from nuclear energy.
Yeah,
Kazakhstan being the top producer of uranium. They don't have any power plant that I could find.
Oh, no, they're busy also building. Rosatom is helping them.
So the...
But they, here's the funny thing. Yeah. Kazakhstan and Russia trade in nuclear material.
Kazakhstan and Russia is like Namibia and South Africa.
Yeah, they sell nuclear material to each other.
Yeah.
So they are currently helping Kazakhstan. Just like Egypt is now also going to get Africa's second nuclear reactor, a nuclear power station.
Guess from who?
Also from Rosatom.
And that would have been South Africa.
Yeah. So, no, South Africa's one is also being refurbished by Rosatom.
I remember the deal that they were supposed to have under Zuma. There were 2 terrible mistakes that were made with that.
Yeah.
1, the president decided to ignore all laws and decide to go underground. And when things came out, people were not happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the second one being, you know, being, because, when I read up on that, what I discovered was that, a Russian NGO, was, you know, leaked the deal to the South African, you know, NGO. So they picked up from there. They went to court in the very same way that a Swiss NGO, basically worked with a lot of African NGOs. Was that last year or 2024? But I think that was last year. To roast Nestle on that one, kids' breakfast cereal that they added a lot of sugar into, especially the batch that was coming to the African market.
Yeah.
So you have civil society is busy. If you try to do things underground, they will catch you. So
no, but here's a funny thing there. Yeah. Do you know what happens even in Europe?
Yeah.
Even in Russia, there are things of or levels of transparency.
Yeah.
That gets exercised.
Yeah.
Like for example, that thing about Zuma.
Yeah.
Né? What happens in Africa is that, for example, South Africa has their Access to Information Act before us.
Yeah.
But their Access to Information Act is like an over-encompassing one which includes cybersecurity and data protection as well. Ours is literally access to information.
Is that thing even enforced yet?
No, because the commission also needs to be established.
Yeah.
And the commissioner of that thing is not under any ministry.
I think they're supposed to be under MICT.
Nah, they're not. That person technically will have a lot of power. That office.
That's not good. Especially when it comes to information, that's a terrible idea.
No, but the one thing that guarantees you, the individual on the ground,
yeah,
is that this person is not subservient to a minister. For example, look at ACC.
Yeah.
ACC is under who? Who does ACC fall under?
Huh,
is it under justice or what?
Yeah, that's something I never looked up on.
Yeah, because we never interrogated from whom does ACC take orders from?
Uh-huh.
Do they take orders from the president or the presidency, or do they take orders from
minister? I know that just right next to ombudsman, ACC, you find their establishment right in the constitution.
Yeah. So, but they're an SOE.
Yeah.
Because they have an act, the ACC.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not like the police that are part of a ministry.
Yeah.
Now, the weird thing about ACC is ACC is a branch out of a function of the police. And a branch out of a function of potentially, let's even say, it's not just police. There's another one that they are
branch. Okay, they're basically a branch of the security cluster in the same way that you see the police, the special field force, yeah, the defense, army, the intelligence guys.
Yeah. So they would factor in something like that because they have to work with sister SOEs like the Bank of Namibia and the Financial Intelligence Center, the FIC,
yeah,
to achieve certain goals, right?
Yeah.
Now, the Access to Information Commission that needs to be established potentially will help with questions or dimensions in trying to make certain things in Namibia a little bit more transparent. For example, like what the civil society and the NGOs are explaining, that BIPA has refused without giving reason,
mm-hmm,
to define beneficial ownership or making available information about the actual ownership of companies that participate in some particular state projects,
yeah,
across the country. Now, clearly, and there's also another dimension that's cited by one of the CSO guys, is that BIPA even has a particular stipulation in its own act that says BIPA has to disclose information about ownership indicators of an entity that is registered with them. Now, when we obviously look at trust aspects going on,
because of too much independence?
Well, not too much independence, but just potentially the influence interference. Influence and interference potentially in this agency doing its job. Look, Helmut, you and I, we already know politicians are not dumb people.
No, they're not.
They're not dumb.
You know, I'll give them more credit for one thing, though. They're very good at acting dumb.
If they could...
Especially one American president.
If they could pass a higher grade exam, or even an AS level exam on how to con a country on who they are, I'd give them top notch marks. I'd give them I'd give them 100 out of 100.
Yep.
Because they do convincing jobs. Another dimension also about where not to underestimate politicians is Namibians, in our case as Namibians, which boils back to the other point that you made a little bit earlier about, if you are demonstrating, what are you demonstrating about if you don't participate in elections? Is primarily those younger Namibians from, mm-hmm, from 29 downwards, or, yeah, from 30 downwards, or from 34 downwards.
Yeah.
Those Namibians are not the Namibians participating in like the discourse that you try to have sometimes, or the discourse that many of us are engaging in, discourse that is based upon, you know, whether or not you are actually participating in the direction this country is taking.
You know, when I came across that, I actually finally realized why a lot of things in the March did make sense.
Did or did not?
Didn't make sense.
No, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, because I'm looking at it this way. Africa has a very large youthful population.
Yeah.
And now we are finding out, at least here in Namibia, because that's one thing that I can, confirm. That's basically being confirmed because of the Afrobarometer report reference that I keep making. That this large youthful population, you know, the leaders of tomorrow, the people that are basically going to take over everything that is being built today, and run everything, especially from, administratively and also executive, legislative, you name it. They're not participating in what is required for them to reach that level. Now, what you're going to have is a very fragile democracy that can easily be toppled, because if you have a large number of your population that are not interested in public discussions, but they have enough energy to march.
Or to make a TikTok about their marching.
Yeah, so that means it's very easy to feed them false information, and then they'll be out there marching on that false information because they haven't been there the whole time that you have been talking about whatever grievances that are going on in the country. And again, South Africa is an excellent example of this. There's one British guy, a black guy, that pointed out that if you look at the anti-immigration movement going on in Europe, especially in the UK, it has always been a governmental structural issue that has been, diverted to be blamed on somebody else. In the mid 1800s, it was that part of Europe had an unregulated industrial revolution boom. Now, that unregulated industrial revolution boom gave us labor laws today. The reason behind that is because the guys that were making profit then, they didn't care how old the person that they were shoving down the mine shaft. They employed 5-year-old. They lost their arms. That lack of regulation led to this wide economic disparity where you have a lot of people that were filthy rich and a lot of people that could barely afford bread.
Yeah.
That structural issue made a lot of the large group of population in the country who were majority of them, basically the economically disenfranchised. Those people were angry. Now, what did the top class tell them? The reason why you don't have all the resources is not because of us who have all the resources, but because of those Irish who equally also don't have all the resources.
Yeah.
Early 1900s, the problem shifted. The problem became not an Irish problem. It became a Jewish problem.
Yeah.
And then we saw, that went so bad, with time that we ended up with the 1930s. And now, after the Second World War, what did they do? They invited, migrants from their former colonies, most of them from the Caribbeans, who were invited to go to Europe, especially the UK, to help them rebuild after the Second World War. Now, what happens after that was, after they finished their rebuilding, all of a sudden, they became an immigration problem. So,
well, and they were known as the Windrush pop generation.
They stand the problem. You can look at it from the Irish in the 1850s and the Jews late 1800s, early 1900s to the Caribbeans.
And the Jews were pushed out of Russia, ne?
It has always been, look, this problem, and this is the problem that South Africa is facing right now.
Yeah.
It's a government structural problem.
How to respond to immigration, and is it a policy that is to the benefit of the inhabitants of the country?
Okay, think of it this way. Not Norman Finkenstein, Andrew Feinstein had to resign. He was a South African member of parliament in the early 2000s. The reason why he resigned is because...
Is it the guy that's now in London?
Yeah, I think so.
He was the...
The one who's allergic to hair.
Allergic to hair.
No.
Why don't you just say he's bald, Helmut?
That's uncalled for. According to his book of the same name, like the documentary, Shadow World.
Yeah.
According to him, shortly after South Africa got its independence in the late 90s, we are talking about 97 all the way to 99 to the year 2000.
Yeah.
The South African government was procuring a lot of military hardware from BAE Systems.
The British government.
Exactly. Now, they didn't need all this because a lot of people that needed medicine, especially HIV patients,
yeah,
that needed this medicine. Now, because of this large amount of procurement in arms that a country that just got its independence did not need, he asked a lot of questions in that direction, and he was just handed a bunch of documents that he knew that, okay, you know what, now he knew that after you receive this document, the next one that's coming up is Gerard Ahir. And that's the same thing that the New York Times did to Chris Hedges when he was asking questions about the invasion of Iraq in 2003.
Yeah. Chris Hedges, the Brit.
Chris Hedges is American.
He's American?
Yeah.
Or am I thinking about that other guy whose brother was...
Maybe you're thinking about Robert Fisk is the British. Now,
This Chris Hedges. Oh, the guy that also interviews Mearsheimer a lot.
Yeah. Now, you see, the thing is, one thing that you see is you have those allegations coming from Andrew Feinstein of possible corruption between the South African government and BAE Systems in the UK, and you have the state capture, the whole, you know, Zuma time thing, and you have the SOFAS scandal, and you have the, you know, the ongoing, is it Mantlanga Commission, with one guy just basically a bunch of guys just coming together to create about 200 shell companies to steal money from one hospital, 2 point something billion.
Yeah,
all these things can be attributed to the government itself.
Yeah,
not immigrants.
Yeah.
But for some reason, when the time came to solve this problem, I just failed to see where the immigrants came into this whole 2 billion missing. Take for example, 2023-2024, the gunning down of the whistleblower that basically brought to light the Tembisa Hospital money laundering suspicions.
Yeah.
Now, Bobita Diokran was gunned down by a bunch of basically taxi drivers who, as you can imagine, or as anyone would reasonably suspect, was most likely paid by some high-profile guys. Isn't that the reason why they decided to come up with the political killing task force?
Mm.
Now, if you
ask them, they didn't know.
Yeah.
That's what Mkwanazi said.
Yeah.
They thought the ANC political killings in KZN were something separate. It was a separate.
It was something isolated.
They approached it as something isolated because they saw it as it's just ANC, ANC political or local political, representatives being, you know, being gunned down in like broad daylight.
And a lot of them have been gunned down.
Yeah. No, they were, most of them were most all gunned down.
Yeah.
While they were either politically activating in the communities where they were found in and around KZN. And then they thought it was something, it was just purely, is there some sort of a destabilizing force trying to do something against the ANC?
And they found out?
And then they realized, with what Mkhonazi said, since they were making so much advances in investigating in KZN, because the KZN, apparently, according to Mkhonazi, was the best one in investigating.
Yeah.
When they moved, when they suggested, no, there's crime intelligence issues happening in Gauteng, can't you, as the KZN political task force killings team, help the guys of Gauteng? When that's where Mkhonazi said, when they went there to help with that aspect in Gauteng,
that's when they realized.
This is where the whole commission, Kat Matlanga's submissions, appearances since last year to now, the other police bosses, the minister that, what's his name? The minister?
Which minister?
The police minister.
Is it Mkunu?
Mkunu. Senzo Mkunu. He almost resigned.
Yeah, I think so.
He was removed, right? Mkunu and Mkunu's involvement, because that Brown Mokgotsi was using Mkunu's name a lot.
A lot of guys were involved, especially in their security cluster.
And that's what Mkhonazi is highlighting. When they moved to us just to help, to be extra hands in Gauteng, that's where
they unveil, that's why he's
unveiled. That's when they learned that this is bigger than they thought.
And technically the killings probably were being directed out of Gauteng. Now, if you're going to ask me how far is Johannesburg from Durban and Pietermaritzburg, because Pietermaritzburg is actually the administrative capital of KZN. It's not Durban. Durban is the bigger metropolitan area than over Pietermaritzburg, but Pietermaritzburg is the capital of KZN. If you're going to ask me how far is Johannesburg from Pietermaritzburg and from Durban, it's probably like from here to Tumep or from here to Grootfontein. You know, a good 300 and something kilometers. So you can drive it in a day, but you also get to understand potentially how the influence flows from one province to the other province in South Africa.
Yeah.
Instead of where you look at, just to give credit to your point that you made about looking at how blame is always placed on immigrant communities of a country,
yeah,
that is actually the failure of certain governmental systems.
Government structural issue.
Yeah. The crime is the thought of a crime boss sitting in Johannesburg, in Sandton, or in one of those super posh guys. Guys, if you've not seen posh Helmut Ne, have you ever been to a city ne, where you even say, bruh, I don't want to come back here. I don't know this wealth. I don't know this wealth.
This one lady that said, but she said that about Dubai, that recommend
are we
that,
talking about the same person?
No, this is...
Our super fan.
No, this is a different one. It's just a random video I found on TikTok of a lady who said...
Namibian or someone else?
No, I think she's American or British, one of the two. That there are places that she does not recommend you go while you're still young. Because while you're exposed to that level of,
opulence.
Opulence.
Yeah.
You're going to have trouble finding satisfaction in a lot of things. I think it's the same thing that has been said psychologically about, high adrenaline activities like your bungee jumping or skydiving.
Yeah.
Yeah. That they push your adrenaline threshold to the point where you do it one too many times, you have a problem enjoying anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now. Here's the thing. When you look at it, for me, it has always been a regulatory issue.
Yeah.
So, coming back to the Zuma, discussion and the nuclear deal with Russia that fell apart because of NGOs, collaborating in both countries. That for me comes down to, one of those things that I like about Namibia, which is consultations. But, I think, one thing that I also find interesting about the Russia-South Africa deal under Zuma there's a reason why, let me put this in the form of a question. Is there a reason why Zuma decided to fly that whole deal under the radar? Because it's not like you can hide a nuclear power plant. It's a massive piece of infrastructure.
Yeah, and potentially the monies that would have flowed from if the deal was pursued throughout. Yeah. Primarily because he probably tried doing the same thing that what happened in Mozambique about the fish.
Fishing development. Tuna pond.
And the second scenario was probably also because of Zuma's prior role within the ANC. You do know that Zuma was the intelligence chief of the ANC.
You see, this is why I keep telling people that politicians are not dumb. He's the intelligence chief, and all of a sudden people think he's become an idiot.
He's a reformed character. And just because he's making jokes there about a number going like 300,000 and 50 carefully. And million, and then he does his famous thing, hololo. And then he goes like, let's try again, guys. Let's try again.
We got this.
not like that. You have to sound like Zuma. Would you say, hololo, we will get it one day we will get it. And then he attempts again. And then everyone, there's a lighter moment.
Just keeps laughing.
But you know what they call that specific laws in psychology, Ahmed?
Yeah.
It's a guy that knows how to distract. He throws you off.
So it's a distraction mechanism.
He sacrifices becoming the fool for the few seconds of limelight. But behind closed doors,
mm-hmm.
you don't know what that guy is planning. So
that's
yes.
Sleek.
So yes, citing primarily, your answer and answering straightforward. Because it's also factored in, for example, a discussion that I watched Monday morning, primarily about the former Australian Prime Minister Kevin Rudd, who the guy that I told you that went and made his thesis about Xi Jinping.
Yeah.
But before that, we're going to come back after the ad break.
A thesis only. Okay, you know what? I'm going to get mine on John Walenga.
Okay, my turn. Hold on. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying, my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my tassies is getting warm. Just keep my eyes. Anyways, long story short. Oh, hi. When you're talking, it's a short story long. Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipura nengelo wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuana onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa no kumona oijamoili nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile ko mderewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back, and we continue. Welcome back to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight. And we're looking at the consultations that has been going on, and please,
no,
I know
ended.
That...
No, they ended.
They ended.
They ended on Friday. Last one was Friday last week.
Guys, one thing that was pointed out, especially my regions, we were not very good at attending them.
You and Anna Kleta.
We're not very good at attending them. But look, the thing is, it's very simple. We have to know that WhatsApp status, not a mode of professional communication. WhatsApp has its own wonderful pros, but professional communication, not good. You want check. But now, when you look at it, that's just one aspect that we have to sort out. The second one is, I think, and this is just my own thought, I think the language is going to be a very big one in terms of getting every Namibian on board with what's going on in the country.
Yeah, Hamoud, I realized something earlier today. Just sometimes when you sit there thinking sometimes, or when you're preparing, work and stuff like that, I realized there is a big problem that Namibia is facing. And it's a very basic thing of, can you speak English or can you not speak English?
Mm-hmm.
And even the convoluted messaging that took place under President Geingob about in what in what mode or in what language or in what platform do you convey an idea to the Namibian on the ground across every corner of this country? Now, how do you explain, like, Anakleta determined?
Mm-hmm.
In Anakleta, it's very scientific. It's a very scientific exercise our colleague conducted. That first session, the one where no one showed up and it was just the governor and Anakleta. And,
yeah, and they had to postpone the whole thing.
And he postponed it to last week, Monday.
Yeah.
In a very basic exercise, Anakleta asked people, why did you not go? A very straightforward, scientific, basic exercise. Why did you not go? And the recurring response that she received was, what does it do to my life? How does it impact my life? What does it do to me? Now, we can further assume and debate about what potential age range the respondents might have been that Anakleta spoke to and interviewed.
Yeah.
But it is a snapshot of a broader, verified, through Afrobarometer, like you also cited earlier.
Yeah.
Through Afrobarometer. So we've got two scientific processes backing up the statement.
Yeah.
A problem scenario that the communications people in Namibia, and not us, the media. It's not us, the media's job. Yeah. It's not our job. It's not even Eagle FM's job to speak on behalf of the Ministry of Health with this bill. Because we're dissecting the discussions, the logic, the developments, the what our listeners need to look out for in the future to see the predictability of this, you know, of this discussion. Because here's the thing, Helmut, that public engagement was not live streamed anyway. So anyway, there were automatically people that would have been, firstly, not be part of the discussion. Secondly, notices were sent out, once again, WhatsApp statuses, social media, with the assumption that 3 million Namibians have 3 million social media accounts. I don't know where they come up with this assumption, but hey, wonderful. Keep thinking like that. And you then ask the question. The person potentially, the average Namibian potentially did not even know that we had a radiation authority.
Look,
with an act.
Here's one thing I like, I've come to learn and admire about marketing, advertising, or basically public sharing in terms of information. It's just how much the Western world is my excellent model example on this.
Mm.
The Western world pours millions in information. Hollywood is literally known to work with their Ministry of Defense, their Department of Defense.
And that was through a propaganda initiative.
Clearly,
that's the thing's name. Well, okay, not its actual name, but if you sort of it like a neutral, it's propaganda.
Yeah, they work, you have their entertainment industry that's tied to their government for one specific purpose. To share, the image they want everyone to see about what their country is.
Mm.
Every time that I like to watch, post-apocalypse movies or more like interstellar types, out space, alien invasion type of movies.
Yeah.
Now, in all these movies, Palki Sharma, the Indian journalist puts it that, have you ever watched these movies? America is always saving the world.
Oh.
And Indians are dancing. That was my favorite part. And that
comes. America is always invaded.
Yeah.
Or America is always experiencing some sort of a natural crisis.
Yeah.
But where's the rest of the world?
The rest of the world. When aliens have attacked. Look, have you seen, what's this? Have you seen The Last Ship? The Last Ship, the TV show. Every time they say disaster,
the
that's attacked.
Navy boat.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh no, that actor passed away in the start of this year.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. Colon cancer. Was it colon cancer?
It does, some type of cancer. Man, that guy killed his role in The Last Ship. Like,
I think he overacted in Grey's Anatomy. For the ladies who know.
That. He was,
he overacted.
This man is a... Okay, you know what? Moving on. You all knew.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, look, the thing is, you can criticize the Americans for, you know, for portraying themselves as the big guy, you know, in every movie that they make. But you know what? They make the movies. They fund the movies. They can push the narrative about their image, the narrative they want the world to see them as.
Which has reinforced the exception.
I'm not going to pay millions of dollars to portray you looking good. I'll portray me looking good.
To portray Namibia looking good. Yes.
Like, who is that dumb?
Yeah. And this is the thing. It has fueled American exceptionalism. The exceptionalism complex that the Americans have developed. Because they're spending their money with their media for their audiences.
Yeah.
Now go ask that of MICT, Hamut.
And I'll give you, I mean, let's just look at, you know, like two or three more examples. You know, Edward Bernays, you know, Torches of Freedom.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was one massive marketing campaign for cigarette companies. And you know, De Beers Diamonds Are Forever.
Yeah.
Which now, if you have an engagement ring, you're going to have to thank De Beers for that.
Yeah, but here's the thing.
That has a diamond in it.
Why am I buying a diamond ring for a woman's finger?
Well,
and both of us won't even last as long as the diamond ring will.
Yeah. It becomes a family heirloom.
I don't know.
Look, the thing is...
Family heirlooms are not a diamond.
My point is, whether you look at it from, you know, from cigarette companies, from Edward Bernays in the 1920s, to De Beers campaign of Diamonds Are Forever, they made music and movies out of the... All these things costed money.
And they inserted the use of cigarettes in on actors and actresses and in musicians, and the branding was then paid to the corporates who owned the rights to the actors and the movies and the artists. So the economy was there.
Information economy.
The economy.
Yeah.
To make the money and the product of a service move.
Yeah.
And then the information economy
was
also there. So it was two products literally put together. Now,
and we think we can just pull off something of that level through WhatsApp status.
Oh, we think we can. We wish we can.
You know, the picture that paints for me is we don't value, we don't understand, not only do we not value information, we don't understand the power that information has. Clearly we don't. Because if we understood the importance of information, would prioritize sharing that information, including paying for it. Okay, how do I put this? The Israeli government just upped their budget on painting themselves look good because they are facing a lot of, anti-Israeli, you know, sentiment.
Yeah. And,
which
and
is more often coming.
Campaigns.
Yeah, which is more often coming from their military because, well, they are spending millions of dollars on making the country look good, and then the soldiers are dancing on TikTok doing, you know, undoing what the government is paying millions of dollars to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I think, and I don't think this is just about Namibia. This is the entire Africa. We don't understand how important information is. We think Hollywood reached at that level just because of entertainment. No, I would argue Hollywood reached that level because there was a narrative to push. If it was just about entertainment, I don't think it would have been that big. Now, you'll find a video on, I think you can find that on YouTube of 50 Cent.
Yeah.
He was asked about, he was asked whether, you know, he was asked, He was invited to the White House to attend an event. He said no. Now his response was, and I like how 50 Cent says things. He says a lot of ridiculously funny things with a straight face.
But then he's serious.
Yeah, he's serious.
People think he's making a joke.
No.
Or he's telling a funny story, but he's serious.
Yeah, he was serious, and his response was like, look. I said no because I didn't know if I was going, if I was going to fix any problem that has been caused in terms of damage. Yeah, and then he finishes up with a very sarcastic you know, comment that, you know what, I think he's referring to the tension, you know, the black and white tension in the US.
Yeah.
That, you know what, you are not going to invite me to that because I'm not being part of that.
Yeah.
But he was offered the, I think $500,000 just to be there. Not to sing or perform, just to be there. And his response, and in that very same video, he says, not all money is good money.
Yeah.
But if you understand why he was invited, you can understand from a political point of view, it's always about an image. It's always about an image.
Mm.
Yes, just go and dance. Was that in 2016 with the, who is this, Hillary Clinton, presidential campaign? That is one of those campaigns. I don't think I've seen any campaign that had a presidential campaign that had that many celebrities. Katy Perry was there, Jay-Z was there, Beyoncé was there. These guys were just.
Oh, the. Was it not the fundraiser? Was it a fundraiser event?
That was.
But the thing that looked more like a concert than it looked.
It was a concert, basically.
It looked
a
more
concert.
Actually like a political event. But they were trying to mix the aesthetics,
yeah.
The look to any viewer was, yeah. Are you trying to merge an actual concert,
yeah.
Of actual people who you as a fan of their art,
yeah.
With political messaging for a political candidate? Now, the worst thing that you can do, remember, Helmut, I've said it many times.
Yeah.
When it comes to business,
yeah.
And private sector, we've already satisfied here on Eagle FM and on the Home Run that unfortunately political economy is tied to the actual economic planning.
Yeah.
Because the planners, the private sector planners of the economy, they do have the WhatsApp numbers and the direct mobile numbers of the political decision makers.
Yeah.
So that's an assumption you can already just put to one side. There's nothing you can do. You can't change that picture.
Yeah, no, you can't separate those two.
Like, for example, Hamoud, sorry for mentioning this, but one of Namibia's big businessmen. Let's, for example, say Mr. Sven Thiemer from ONL.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen him at ruling party events.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong. It's his democratic right.
Mm-hmm.
Whether he has a membership or not, it's his democratic right to be there.
Yeah.
Nah? But it's also the messaging that's out there to, you know, the various levels of public discourse that takes place. Some people have an allergic reaction to political parties.
Yeah.
Others champion the presence of political parties.
Yeah.
And then you've got alternative voices to politics like religious entities who believe political parties technically should be more subservient to them than them should than them as religious entities to political entities, mm-hmm. or political decision making. And then you've got the average Joe and Jane on the street who don't care
about any political affiliation or religion.
They don't even have those conversations. They'll tell you straight up, I hate politics. I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
And when there's an elections, they're the ones who are sitting at home braying and have kicking a few beers back and playing PlayStation and Xbox.
Yeah.
Because they don't care. Now, the thing is, we don't know how many of those Namibians are there in that quadrant. The other three quadrants, we also don't know how many of them are there. But then comes the dilemma, Helmut, when you now take that into an economy that is formalized like the US, where that event of those performers, those big name, multi-million dollar performers,
mm-hmm.
were performing
they were paid.
At a Democratic event, Democratic Party event in the US.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the fans are asking, Jay-Z, are you endorsing this person?
Yeah, that's actually an interesting question because, I think what people that put together events like that forget is, fans of different artists,
yeah.
may have, also have different, political point of views.
Yeah.
Yeah. You will find maybe, two people that are both fans of Beyonce, but they have different, but they have a wildly different political point of view.
They might be Republican.
Yeah.
They might be Republican.
So.
And Beyonce now showed up at a Democratic Party event.
Yeah. And they're going, okay, what's going on here?
So, and then they go like immediately, okay, so, you said yes to perform here.
Yeah.
Because you are biased to this political system.
Now, that's one of the biggest concerns, which is also now primarily been some of the things that people realized, like when they saw those tech billionaires at Trump's inauguration.
Yeah.
Where everyone around the world went like, and that's what spurred up Helmut the, what the French and the EU is doing. The technology divide.
Yeah,
between the EU and the US.
Yeah. Speaking of the French, I think it was today when they also implemented the Australia ban of social media for kids.
Yeah. Such developments primarily,
yeah,
you can view them low-key as anti-American business developments because the French and the Australians are now becoming protectionist. It's protectionist measures because they're protecting themselves from data transference, data manipulation by American companies sitting in the US.
Yeah.
On French citizen sovereign, because how much? Here's the thing: you with your ID number, you are a Namibian, a sovereign Namibian asset for the Namibian nation. You are here making money for the country, spending money for the country, buying products for the country. You are making the system work. Meta on your phone adds no value to Namibia. It has no value, no economic indicator, zero. But in essence, Meta is making money, more money than Namibia is making money from you for you being on a Instagram or a Facebook profile. Because all that Meta has to do is align advertising that is being targeted to Namibia from wherever. They load it up and they are pulling the check that side.
Yeah.
You are not pulling any check. Namibia is not seeing any dime. Earlier today, that discussion at this workshop, remember the creativity, the creative discussion that MICT is championing by trying to contact Meta and Alphabet?
The monetization discussion.
The monetization discussion.
Yeah.
Now, there is a fair logic positioned in that by Namibia's direction or Namibia's perspective of these entities operate here. That's also where I started from. But no one could understand why am I starting from. But you have Facebook. When this Samsung smartphone is imported into Namibia by whichever retailer here in Namibia, Facebook is preloaded onto this device. Instagram is preloaded onto it. Netflix is preloaded onto it.
Yeah,
so
I had
why
to...
can't Namibia... And in some cases, the Namibian is paying a subscription fee, for example, with Netflix or with Spotify, if you want a Spotify premium account.
Yeah.
Why can't the Namibian government write a lovely worded email to the South African offices of these applications?
Lovely worded.
A lovely worded but strongly worded email. Or, just a letter.
Strongly worded condemnation.
A letter of intent. To tell them literally what Indonesia did with Apple.
Yeah.
Listen, I see your products are here, but people are paying for services and you're not paying VAT to the Namibian coffers.
Yeah.
So it also shows the level of economic approach that we are willing to take, meaning from the kinds of political leaders that are obviously there and the planning that's taking place from that dimension.
Yeah.
But it also shows there are things that Namibia could have accessed in terms of taxation. Now, I don't know what's wrong, whether the ball should be in Minister of ICT's court, Teofilis, or if the ball should be in Minister of Finance and Public Enterprises' court, Minister Shafuda. Then, take that a little bit further. The internet cable that was brought here, Equianos, WAX, and then the other one that's there, the Namibia was connected to three. WAX starts most from Europe. Equianos is a Google cable.
Yeah.
Then the first wave, the one before WAX, is a Google Meta cable. The two transatlantic ones. Namibia had to pay for that cable to be connected, to be grounded, to be landed on Namibia. Ne?
Mm-hmm.
But Namibia did not take this discussion, Helmut, of how is the digital economy moving past this physical infrastructure? How is it proliferated? How is it gaining traction in my economy? What is happening? I'm not talking about local Namibian businesses.
Yeah.
I'm talking about
a technology developed somewhere else that has impacts here. And the only place where VAT is collected is on cell phone, on mobile phone recharge vouchers that you buy from MTC, or when you buy the cell phone, which can last you 4 years maximum.
Remember last year, I think it was last year in November when the Minister of ICT had was addressing a group of influencers at the Sundown event.
I think it's that's the event we, the media, were also invited to, and we were like, what's the thing?
what am I gonna do there? Now, the thing is, you know, every time that I have listened to, you know, as someone that's in the creative sector, every time that I've listened to, you know, to the Minister of ICT addressing young people, especially in the content creation space, one thing that she never leaves out is the monetization discussion, because she knows is either she, you know, she is either she Israels it or it's going to be asked.
What is Israeli example?
Preempt. Now.
Are we talking in reference to Iran?
Of course. You know, I have a reasonable reasons of suspicions that they will attack, so I'll just attack them before they do. Now, the thing is,
we believe it was going to happen.
Yeah, we believe it's going to happen.
There's no proof.
Actually, we believed during the Obama administration it didn't happen. We believed during the Biden administration it didn't happen. And now we still believe, you know, spirit no surrender. Now, the thing is,
okay, spirit no surrender, yes.
Not helping, am I?
Yes, now, yes, we are not.
The thing is, at the Sundown event, I remember the Minister of ICT said, they are having this discussion with different, social media, especially social media platforms, and throw YouTube in that bucket. And the reason they keep getting from most of these the owners of these platforms that they approach in relation to monetization is the population size of the country, which I think which brings me I bring that up because of the point you made in reference to Indonesia's the ultimatum they gave Apple, that if you want to have a market if you want to access our market, you're going to have to source some of the parts of the product that you are bringing to our market locally.
Yeah, and Indonesia is how many people?
Indonesia by landmass not big. Population size?
No, they're technically big because they're almost the ones with the largest collection of islands.
Population size?
Indonesia is not a joke.
Wait, aren't they over 100 million?
Just getting now to pop. They are, knowing all geography sometimes. Yeah, it's between 287 to 289 million.
That's now...
on average.
We'll have to collaborate with other African countries if we have to pull that off. Because we can't pull that off.
Botswana and Eswatini.
Even if you combine all those three countries that you mentioned, we don't stand a chance.
Yeah.
Yeah. By landmass, Namibia is huge. Botswana is huge. South Africa is huge. Now, South Africa has an advantage of, market size. Mm-hmm. It's South Africa, Nigeria, and Angola. I mean, they keep coming up every time that you look at the biggest economies in the continent. Now, for countries like Namibia, I don't think countries like Namibia can pull off the ultimatum that Indonesia gave Apple.
No, we don't have that clout.
Ultimatums, not just negotiations, but ultimatums like that, depends on the leverage that you have. What's your bargaining chip?
What are you putting on the table?
Exactly.
Or what do you have as leverage?
Yeah.
Like you said.
Man, I'm looking at, pretty much every economic and political angle. We don't have any leverage. So. They can just say, okay, you know what? I'll just pull out of your market because I don't have much to lose. And they'll be right.
Mm.
Yeah. So I think, this is what's going to keep bringing us to one thing, industrialization.
Yeah.
So, now for us to pull off industrialization, we need, two things are required for industrialization. Two things that the SADC guys recently, deliberated on. That's water and energy.
Yeah.
But you have to understand that if you are going to look at mines, for example, mines themselves, that's just extractive. And these are very thirsty industries.
Yeah.
They are consuming water like crazy. So that means... And they're also consuming energy like crazy. Mm. So you need affordable energy. Yeah. Because at the end of the day, you need a type of business investment in an industry that makes sense in terms of return on investment. If you are spending all your money on energy, that business becomes very unsustainable. Mm. So not just the energy that you need affordable energy. So affordable energy, now it's one of those, brings us to the discussion of nuclear energy as one of the energy mix in our energy diversification discussion. So if you're talking about nuclear energy, and not only we are not starting from the bottom. We have dug a couple of kilometers from the bottom. That's where we're starting from, because not only do we need the expertise, which we don't have a lot of in terms of energy generation.
Which bottom,
Helmut? Nuclear energy generation.
We are far. Yeah. I'll be honest with you. Our biggest hurdle is similar to the green industry's hurdle. The ratio.
Oh no, that one is even worse, because
that is our hurdle. That Helmut, in every scenario that I'm looking at, we might have to import people. And I'm sorry for using the word import, because it makes it sound like human trafficking.
Transatlantic.
But we will have to fly in professionals that will have to basically train people at the nuclear power plant.
You know who would gladly do that?
Who?
Pretty much everyone. I think the Europeans, Americans, the Russians, the Chinese. Just ask.
Of course. And the South
Africans, as for the security of your technology, that's a whole different discussion.
The South Africans are currently being trained by the Russians. It was an MOU on an agreement, an MOU that was signed at that Atom Expo.
Yeah.
And I recorded the discussion of a specific Nigerian province signed also an MOU with Rosatom.
Yeah.
And then there was South African Nuclear Energy Regulator, NERA is its name. Yeah, NERA. They had to also, NERA or SERA, one of the two. But that guy was also present there. I've never seen such a nervous guy ever in my life. South Africans are nervous, Hamut.
South Africans are nervous?
Yeah, when they get to these other platforms, us Namibians and other Africans, we were just you were just there.
Yes, you are.
You know, you are looking like a wild goose there in the bush. You are saying, oh, what's this? Yeah. What's that? But when it comes to South Africans, they're like super nervous. They're like super, for some reason, they feel out of their element. They don't know what's going, they are just super, overly cautious, even though the guy representing Southern Africa from Rosatom is a South African himself. So it's a South African Nigerian sitting.
Yeah.
The guy from NERA, the SOE representative, the CEO, super nervous. You should see. Let me help you with a comparison. The Green Hydrogen Institute at UNAM. Which is led by, what's the doctor's name? Dr. Sivai. Yes, he's Zimbabwean, yes.
Yeah.
But he's been in Namibia long enough. In many cases, you consider him technically to be a Namibian.
Yeah.
And he's most the foremost sort of like academic related to that particular project at UNAM.
Yeah.
Dr. Sivai, when we had Invalde here on the home run.
Yeah.
Invalde interviewed Dr. Tsivai and his colleague 2 weeks after they had to start the institute. Those guys were nervous in those first couple of months from the first Green Hydrogen conference that took place there, the first at Country Club. They were nervous after the announcement were at that conference, to the interview that was held here, to, the first year of that part of 2022 ended. When we got into 2023, you could see then they were more comfortable about the scale of the project
the scale of the job that they now had to be in charge of, meaning the project management that they had to do, and what role, you know, their participation is going to play in guiding this new training facility, this training slash coordination facility, this institute. Up until March, when I went to that Power to X conference, where they had the German university, the University of Stuttgart, that provided the Power to X, you know, economic analysis.
For the
biomass.
Yeah, we had a discussion on it.
Yeah. Up until that point, now you should see that doctor's body language, how confident he is in the work that they are doing, and the scope and the scale of what is to be expected of him and his team. Because his team also includes UNAM graduates. Someone completely comfortable in understanding, okay, this is going to lead Namibia into this new particular chapter of Namibia's particular industrialization. That guy from NERA was so super nervous. Homeboy was, he had to like watch his, because there were South African journalists also with us.
Yeah.
Ne? But I'm not speaking for the South African media. The South African media, they literally carry knives around for their public officials. Let's be honest. They carry knives around, and you sit there thinking,
that's a very South African thing to do.
Why are you trying to butcher each other here in Russia? What is the story? So, that was the scenario. The other scenario, obviously.
Wait, they were actually up at odds with their minister, you know,
not like super obviously.
Yeah.
Because what happened was, all the Africans journalists that were now brought to Sochi, when we were busy recording this announcement, it most obviously now leads to Q&A.
Yeah.
So the South Africans they sort of like hijacked the mics first to ask their questions.
Yeah.
There was a lady from Daily Maverick or Mail and Guardian. Her name is Karen also. So she asked her question. She gets her response. She records it. After we are done, we asked her, did you get your answers? Because when we, the Namibians, asked our questions to them now in terms of, you know, what's the broader scope? What's the impact for Africa? What are you guys looking at? Why are you trying to do certain things? And so on and so forth. What is the ultimate aim between Namibia and, Russian what's that thing? Russian relations through your entities primarily. What is the average African supposed to see in terms of these engagements? The NERA guy was willing to respond very, you know, I'm talking now purely about body language observation. The NERA guy was glad to answer Namibian questions, but was super, super reserved when it came to the South African questions. And after we were done, when we asked now the three South Africans that were there, the one lady is bragged to us Namibians that she's a certified Sangoma. And we stood there looking at her and we're like, what's it done? Now I
know. So tell me, what now?
She's a certified Sangoma. A witch doctor.
There's a certificate for that?
Yes. There's a course.
One more time.
There's a course to teach someone how to be a witch doctor in South Africa.
Do they have an entire textbook on incantations?
I don't know, Helmut. I don't know. Remember?
That's very Harry Potter-ish.
As you and I know, witchcraft, even between Hardap and Kavango East, is not even the same thing.
Ah, yeah. So I'm told. Believe me.
I'll just let it slide there. I'll just leave that there.
It would have simplified our transport discussion, but anyway.
No, it could. Yeah. It could. Also, the identification of the
spirit. But does a broom make vrupado? I mean, that'd be fun.
No, it doesn't, Mahmoud. All you just hear is a foof. But anyway. My obvious special effect will kick off as I hope, but yeah. But anyway, so we asked Karen.
No, if you hear foof, Dwight, that's not the broom, that's the owner of the broom.
Hamid, let's stop the anchor there.
Okay.
Let's stop that bus right there. So, that was an unintended,
roadblock. So we asked Karen, are you comfortable with your question, with your answers, with your responses?
Yeah.
She said, oh, no, no, don't worry. Don't worry. I'll just send it on to an expert. All three men that were sitting there, even the guy from Nigeria, were all nuclear scientists.
Sure. Reminds me of the, you know, the negotiation teams between the US and Iran.
Yes. The three men sitting in front of us were all nuclear scientists. They all had a history of knowing. Even, look, we can hear all we want about the negative aspects of Nigeria.
Yeah.
One thing we should acknowledge.
Yeah.
Nigeria has invested in human capital before Namibia.
They have a lot of academics.
Yes. I mean, when last year came up about the Dangote refinery, and the potential now commercialization of that refinery, because it's still Africa's largest, or it's Africa's first largest. An interview popped up that was conducted about that took place between a Nigerian researcher slash journalist who was interviewed by another platform, and this guy answered to the person, the platform interviewing France 24 years, about why is it taking Africa so long specifically to have these kinds of, you know, private investment into privately owned infrastructure like refineries.
Mm-hmm.
And he explained, well, it was primarily, you know, the influences on the political structures of African countries, independent countries at the time. The Soviet Union had approached Russia, had approached Nigeria back in the 70s and told them, like the Iran suggestion to us, Namibia, remember, that Justicia went to.
The whole, what's that?
The offering, the steel.
Steel and, on discount.
Yeah, the steel on discount and the free technical advice on how to build a refinery. The Soviets had done the same thing for the Nigerians in the 70s or in the 80s. The Soviets offered to the Nigerians by saying, listen, we will build you the refinery free of charge. We will build you the refinery free of charge. Now, it wasn't an oil refinery. It was a different product, a different mineral. We will build the thing for you free of charge. We will share with you knowledge, expertise, training, skills development, alles. You don't have to pay a cent. It was first...
They didn't worry about intellectual property?
Zero. Remember, this is the Soviet Union.
You're right.
Now, that was the first indicator.
Don't worry, it will be free.
Yeah. That was the first indicators of the Global South to South engagement, which is now in full swing today as we're sitting here, as we're talking. The dimension from that was NATO elements interfered in Nigerian decision-making of saying yes to the Soviet Union aspect. My first inkling was literally that potentially was the British interfering in Nigeria. Not even the Americans, just the British.
No, that was the British at the time. Definitely the British.
That was the British. So when we look at decisions like this, and ultimately when Namibia wants to go with the nuclear bill, the nuclear bill is like the first step. The nuclear bill has to substitute things. And so developments that obviously have to come out of this, Helmut, to give you my fair assessment right now, as we've now just welcomed David in, is primarily that put a good 5 years on it.
In terms of duration, how long is
duration, it? Duration, debates, understanding. Remember, this bill still has to go to Parliament.
Yeah.
Parliament has been the last hurdle for... What, nothing happened in last year even.
You know what? I don't want to miss that discussion.
Helmut.
Listening to our politicians talk science is my favorite part.
No.
What?
Here's what you can look forward to it by the end of this year. And David knows all this also. The joint declaration debate has to come back. Now, if the joint declaration debate comes back, for how long do you think this nuclear bill will be on ice?
I'm going to put my money on 100 years.
Okay.
Because we don't have the information.
Sorry, David, for parachuting you in. What's your assessment of how long that will take?
No, it's very difficult to predict because, you know, one day in politics is equivalent to 1 year. Anything can happen.
So we have a different time. We have different perceptions of time.
Yeah, you know, it depends on who is, pushing the bill. It also depends on the interest and also the foreseeable future of those, you know, institutions. To say, are we just establishing institutions? Are we just moving because the world is moving?
Yeah.
Or we are moving because we know exactly what you want? Are we planning within our term? Because if you look at the bill, especially I was reading it now, looking at the establishment of these three institutions, and also looking at the roles of ministries, my question is always to say, is the consultation really enough, looking at that whole draft for contribution? Is the consultation time enough, especially within one the regions?
Month. It was 1 month from 29 June.
Yeah.
No, not even a month. No, I'm lying. Hmm. 2 weeks.
No, I'm speaking about how much time do you spend in the region?
No, no, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
If you assess it from 29 June to 17 July,
yeah,
2 weeks.
Yeah, how much time do you spend in the region? And you are just doing it for the sake of doing it. And what are some of the contributions so far? But I think it's a good start. One thing that we need to look at is that the bill is a good start.
Mm.
That way we are supposed to start. Maybe 20 years ago, but for now it's a good start because
you're better late than
ever. Yeah, one of the things I'm always saying is that I do not care if Namibia gonna have a nuclear power plant in the next 20 years. What my concern is that are we moving toward a sustainable energy in terms of practical part?
Yeah.
Because those are long-term things. Because the moment we start understanding the importance of a long-term planning,
mm-hmm.
then you move away from the things of saying, no, guys, by that time I'll be already retired by that time. But let us look at the future part of it. And to look at Parliament, one of the things that, and I don't want to counter-argue, we should not really just underestimate the capacity of Parliament. Because if you compare the
kind of difficult,
you know, no. you don't need to underestimate the capacity of Parliament.
Yeah.
The only thing that is new in Namibian politics is a pre-coalition Parliament, if I have to put it that way.
Yeah.
But if you look at capacity of Namibian Parliament, intellectual capacity, and the diversity of Parliament in terms of age that we have now, you start seeing that it's one of the most diversified parliament that you can ever have. But we are in a new era, especially looking at the pre-coalition parliament. And yes, capacity.
Wait, is this one a coalition?
No, not necessarily.
Yeah.
But it requires you to move with other people.
Yeah.
Because numbers.
To negotiate.
Yeah, you have to negotiate.
And to accommodate.
You have to accommodate others. And this is the only thing. That's why if you look at what happened
I was thinking of a cabinet, sorry.
No, what happened last year?
Yeah.
What happened last year? Most of the things, they push and pull. Opposition is saying, no, we are not going to let you just to move smoothly.
Mm.
We need to scrutinize you. We need to come and debate. It's not like going to be other part.
Yeah.
At some point you can say, if that is really the intention, maybe you are going to have stronger policies. But the question is that how long is it going to take? And when are you going to catch up? Because the concern should always be catching up. Because if you don't catch up with the growing population, if you don't catch up with the growing demands of people, if you are not catching up with increment in terms of the cost of living, energy prices moving up, look at, you talk about water. Talk about, there's nothing that is not moving up. You speak about oil and and gas and many other things, but to look at it the positive part, and also to look at the answer of that question directly, is that let's give it 5 years. Let's give it 5 years, because 5 years, it may look like it's a long time, but it's not a long time. Let's give it 5 years. And also see to say, apart from establishment of institution, are these just institutions because we want to employ you as a commissioner? I see I was reading director general there and also commissioners and all these things. Is it just because of the job, or is it really that we are going to move somewhere far? And that is what I can say for now, especially looking at the time frame and what is happening now. And maybe just to look at the interest too, to say Namibians, you want cheaper energy. That is number one. We want what has been stated of electrification of household by 2030. 70%. We wanted that to happen, but not only to happen in terms of happening because it's a strategy of the ministry. But if you electrify my house, if I have electricity at home, am I able to afford the electricity?
It's not just that.
Electrification
also speaks to the rural urban migration
because
NAMPOWER and ECP will make economic decisions by saying, listen, we have assessed that there's five people in the bush there. We don't know if it's a village or not. We just know five people settled there. However, we know that, let's say, Groothoop is a designated urban settlement. So we will bring the service just to Groothoop. How it gets from there, those five people must find out. Now, those five people are going to write to a rural councillor in Windhoek and say, yeah, Dwight, I don't have electricity. Your party made promises. Where's my electricity? I want also to read books at night and watch TV and have Netflix. But then you can look at the person's economic skill. There's a there's an actual councillor I speak to. I worked with a guy in a previous he's actually the rural Windhoek rural, council representative. He told me straight up, Dwight, my people don't want to pay. My community members don't understand the dimension of if you bring a service, you must be able to reciprocate with paying for the service.
You do not want to pay or they are not able to afford.
It's both, he said.
Let's go with the second one.
But the first response, every time that I've met him, when we talk about his role, he says, my people don't want to pay. My community doesn't want to pay.
Yeah, but because... No, it's a very good thing that you bring that aspect. But when you look at the communication from ECB, for example, they always speak about we were together that day. They always speak about
the media day one.
Not the media, the previous event before. I think it's the media day. They always speak about the cost of generation,
And
the cost of transmission and distribution and all these things. Now, if you electrify household in Namibia, 70% of them by 2030.
Do
you know who's going to pay for that? Still the citizens.
Of course.
Still the citizens.
Yeah.
But now you have the thing is have sustainable electricity production as fast as possible, sustainable as possible, so that you can remove yourself from these things that you have been so attached for a very long time. That's why now we are everybody's fighting. NAMPOWER is government, ECB is government. We are also here on the ground.
And NAMPOWER has to submit to ECB before NAMPOWER announces things.
Do you know that since 2024, or compare from 2024, they always bring 8%. They don't have to fight from there. They always bring
8%. No, but last year was alarming, because there was like a pre-announcement engagement, public engagement that they held, and also at the Commerce Regional Council. NAMPOWER is an economics / engineering / distribution department. The guy that presented is an actual engineer. But he's number two, his colleague.
And then they are presenting, they are very angry.
You can see when they're body language. It's like from a defensive position.
He
literally said, we are actually supposed to have not be, to be now asking for 14%. Because they were adding up the amount of times before last year that they've had to basically undersell. You know, someone was taking a knock. And the 14% suggestion was the one that they said, we are supposed to ask for 14%. We submitted this proposal to the ECB. We are here now with you. Saying it with you, Namibians.
And just ask yourself a question to say, if I have to look at 2030, how many units am I going to have in 100 Namibian dollars? Because now you are below 40. If you just have to ask yourself that question, if we don't have an immediate intervention, because you will not stop population to grow. You will not stop people to continue consuming. You will not stop businesses to continue. But the question is that, do you have any intervention? Because if that is the case, it's even more difficult. Because in 2024, they brought 8%. Then Energy Fund bring around 300 million. To say, no, I got you. There's always that bulletproof that they put to protect us. I got you. They bring another aspect to say, no, we got you. But 2024, nothing happened. But yeah. You know what happened in 2025? You still have to come and pay for that.
Yes.
Because the costs continue to increase.
So basically,
increase.
The I got you has an expiry date.
No, I got you just temporarily.
Yeah.
Yeah, just temporarily.
It's just a short term, yeah. I got you.
Yeah,
and,
because you are wearing that bulletproof to protect you from AK-47. But it will protect you from a drone. The drone is coming. Just temporarily. That's why there was a time when I was doing BS, I always asked to say, what is the sustainable subsidization?
Yeah.
Because we are supposed to subsidize while you are coming up with a plan.
Yes.
For a permanent solution.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or you make subsidy.
Yeah.
By law,
yeah,
a predictable thing.
Yeah,
where you actually phase out subsidy.
Yeah,
you don't respond every time.
But I think that's I think that's part of the problem when it comes to energy, for example.
Mm.
I think subsidizing is your always going to be go-to solution, because if you just tell the power generation companies to, you know, if you freeze the price, for example, like Mamdani is doing when it comes to rent in New York, the price of running the facility is not going to freeze.
Mm.
Yeah. The price of the equipment, just the equipment that is needed, because I don't think we manufacture any of it.
Mm.
Yeah, so they have to buy it somewhere. So the price of these things will only go up. So they will have to factor
even the
that.
Copper cables.
They will have to factor that in the in the price. So in the price somewhere for them to make a good return investment to keep the business to keep the whole thing operational.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's not going to work very well. So that means if you have to tell them. I think our only solution here is the very same solution that we have to talk about when it comes to housing.
Mm.
You need to generate more.
Mm.
Because, if you can generate more, that means, you're talking about building new facilities.
Yeah.
But, as long as we are importing about, we import about what, like 60% of our electricity?
I know, it's over 50. But it depends, but it's just that they're over 50. You are not on your own. You're not on your own.
I know. That's the thing.
Mm.
That importing means the prices, is not determined by NAMPOWER, or it's not even by the Minister of Mines and Energy.
Oh, no.
There are a lot of factors that determines how much it's going to cost, including the clients that are supplying the energy.
Mm.
Even though ECB themselves said, they are successful, and the Tanzanian electricity control variant,
they are equivalent, yeah.
Yeah, they're equivalent, yeah. Even though the both of them are basically brag about being the ones that have the best cost-effective presentation in the Southern African power pool cluster.
Yeah.
But then you also have to take into account the geographies, the population dynamics, and so on and so forth.
Because they like you said, you can't stop a population from growing.
Yeah,
you can't.
Yeah.
But if you want to understand that,
as long as it gets dark, people are going to be busy.
No, you don't need the darkness to be busy.
You
just need the goodwill.
You were still trying to keep it PG.
No, you just need the goodwill.
I mean.
No.
Where there's a will, there's a way.
Yeah, you know what I wanted to say. Apart from that, we speak of energy diversification.
Yeah,
and one of energy diversification aspect is attached to value addition to uranium, which is the center of that bill.
Yeah.
Now, let us also not underestimate green hydrogen. But when they came.
Mm-hmm.
They are also speaking about energy,
yeah.
Contribution to that energy. Let's give it time and ask ourselves to say, when you get to 2027, what is your contribution to the grid? Because you also have an aspect of energy. Even if it's not to the grid, how much your projects are contributing, especially to meet the energy demand. But there's one thing, I think I need to go back and do research. If you want to understand that... I don't want to say we are not at a good pace financially, especially in terms of subsidization. Mm-hmm. There's something interesting happened, especially when the price of electricity came out to be increased just recently.
Yeah.
When you read that statement, of subsidization, to say regardless of subsidization of 90 million to that, we still increased. But apart from National Energy Fund, maybe Dwight will assist me. Where did the other fund coming from? Which means that to me, I have a question to say, is Energy Fund not able to fund us now? I mean, is it? It's not able to handle us anymore.
The one to absorb the shocks of this block plus block, it was unblocked.
Yeah, because there are two funds apart from now, Energy Fund that you normally know. There is one. I think I need to go and check about that.
The Energy Fund is the petroleum.
No, the Energy Fund is for electricity and also oil.
And also oil.
Yeah.
It's the one that collects its levies and things from the fuel price.
Yeah, it's the same.
It's the same.
Yeah, it's the same. Yeah.
The one that the minister mentioned that day that I had to look at, it seems like it's eating into something's budget. The minister obviously didn't share that.
Yeah.
Because every time the minister is fashionably early... I've got to make the minister look bad. I'm not going to complain here about something I can't control.
Yeah.
So he's fashionably early.
Yeah.
Primarily about the announcement, but he explained obviously that at one stage it was literally soaking up the subsidy that was being put forward for a span of a month and a half or 2 months and a half was more than $1 billion by now. The strategy to deal with the shock has soaked up $1 billion. $1 billion that, like help that David now said, comes from one part from a known source. And secondly, you've got to ask, okay, what projects potentially, if we look at the medium term, the October thing that Minister Shufura has to do.
Oh, midterm budget review.
Budget review. When we get there, we then will possibly know what projects were impacted, whose money was re-diverted to deal with the shock under the Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy.
Yeah, because you must be concerned and maybe look at the long-term part to say, it's like you say, I'm assisting you here and there.
Yeah.
But you are still in pain.
Yes.
To say, I cover you, get this bulletproof, is the only one I have.
Yes.
But you are still getting the hit.
Yes. I'm still taking
the you are still taking
I'm
the
still
nose.
Being shot.
Yeah, you are still being
I'm
shot.
Still lumping.
But you can see there is an effort from the government. The question is that I don't have a problem with what we do. I have a problem with, in terms of long term, because you need to catch up in a lot of things. Because at the center of everything, you have energy. At the center of everything, you have energy. But on top of energy, you have... continuation of economic inequality. Look at the statistics for today. Maybe you look at the financial inclusion report. They're a bit shocking because somebody expect and this is something that I'm going to discuss tomorrow with one of the experts, especially from the financial sector. You want to see the balance to say if this one is being prioritized, am I pulling Helmut when I'm going up? Or I'm just moving David up, then we'll come back again to look for to pull up a helmet.
Look, when it comes to looking for solutions in terms of a lot of problems, especially in a national level in my country, one thing that I have one conclusion that I've reached is the point you made earlier, and you basically made several times that thank you very much for the I got you type of subsidization. What are we doing that will basically bring up an extended a long term solution to this problem? Now, and another point that you made, I'm not sure if that was here or before before we got here.
Yeah.
About how all the developmental achievements and projections that we make, how they trickle down and how they are changing lives on on a ground level for an ordinary Namibian. I drew this conclusion from the time that Dwight and I had a discussion on food insecurity.
Yeah.
Look, the thing is, every time that I go shopping, I see aisles full of food. When I come across a report that says we have food insecurity, I can't help but draw one conclusion. But the food is right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the picture that I get from there is that it's not the food that's lacking. It's the means to access the food that's not there.
No, it's a very good Yeah, point that you have made.
I mean, it's the same thing, you know, it's the same thing that we have with pretty much, anything, including housing.
Yeah.
There are houses that you can find and buy, but have you seen the prices?
Still empty.
Yeah. So it's not the houses that you need. You have to balance the, you have to look for a cost of living solution.
Mm.
Yeah. So that people can afford the food that in store that they cannot afford. That is giving you the clearly, if you ask me, wrong statistics of food insecurity. You don't have food insecurity.
Of a reality.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think this will also bring us back to human development. Yeah. To say, apart from infrastructure, what can we do to human beings? You can give me a house today. You can give all of us houses.
Yeah.
But if you don't have access to finance, if you don't have access to resources, how are you going to maintain that house?
No, you can't.
We are just going to have it as a place.
Yeah.
But it's going to deteriorate. We are not going to add any value to it. And we are not even going to be happy in it. Because at the end of the day, it's a human beings to say,
yeah,
if you bring about this bill,
yeah,
it's the same question to say, people are asking, what is in for me? How can I help you?
Yeah.
Like, I'm consulting, yeah, I really want to know. How can I assist you? What is in for me?
Yeah.
And if you are not answering that question, the statistic will continue to shock us and we'll end up like South Africa, which they are calling is a series. You don't know what's going to shock you in the next episode. It's true. It's what I'm saying. You don't know what will happen on Friday.
it sounds like when I could never understand why my friends were always watching a golly at every time at open time. They would run home at 5 o'clock. I need to go watch my favorite movie.
Because movie directors, they have this thing of, I think it's part of human psychology to leave you something that you expect.
Yeah, they will leave you in suspense.
Remember this? This was at a time where the internet is not as prominent.
Yeah.
So people were fascinated. That's why the technology was invested in the TV.
Yeah.
And the broadcasting equipment.
Yeah.
So the person has to wait until tomorrow 5 o'clock.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. We end up like South Africa. You know, Ramaphosa only has today. The fate will be defined tomorrow. Just to give an example. Yeah. But come back to the discussion.
Today you were stable and comfortable. Yeah. Tomorrow you are critical.
Tomorrow, don't know if you are in charge or no more in charge.
Tomorrow you are critical.
Yeah.
Critical and stable.
Yeah. Yeah.
So basically, every day is a ta-da.
Yeah.
Look, guys.
Yeah.
Surprise.
Yeah.
But yeah, guys, let's quickly take a live read and come back after that.
Velvita
University, for the 2027 applications that are now open for the Faculty of Health Sciences for the following programs: Certificate for Enrolled Nurse, Midwife, or Acushur Level 6, Certificate in Pharmacy Level 5, Diploma in Environmental Health Sciences Level 6, Bachelor of Social Work Honours, Bachelor of Nursing and Midwifery Science Honours, Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing Level 8, Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety Level 8, Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health Nursing Level 8, Master of Public Health, and the Master of Occupational Health and Safety. For more information, please call 081-403-6406. Velvita University, where everyone is an achiever. So yes, guys, besides obviously, not to miss out on, or fear of missing out, or to suffer from the fear of missing out, as it is sometimes known as FOMO.
FOMO, seriously?
No, that's his name that they use on the internet. Fear of missing out. Or they use the other one, in case you missed.
Okay.
ICYM. I thought, what is ICYM? What is ICYM? What is this, a brand? No, it's just in case you missed.
I only know FIFO.
Yeah, guys, you know.
So,
FIFO is technically an accounting term.
But one may want to know when is the midterm budget review again?
Every October.
And how many months do we have?
August, September.
Yeah, basically two.
Do you have any prediction what are you going to report about?
Definitely about the shocks of the oil.
No, regarding now progress of projects.
Do you know what I'm waiting for?
Yeah.
What we shared last year, the civil society meeting in September, before Minister Shifuta has to go to Parliament.
You know where my interest is going to be?
Yeah.
It's on the green schemes. I don't want to know what's happening now because I've tried. to check what's happening now. There are those which are really progressing. But somebody just wishing to say, when we are going to present the midterm budget review, she did something interesting. Was it last year when also included the progress?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, within some of the green schemes. I think there were just three. Then I asked the question to say, what about others? We want to know.
Wasn't that this year's budget?
No. The other one also, the midterm. I think there were just three green schemes there. Then I asked, we want to know, even if the other one produced one potato, we just want to know. What is happening? Because no. Because we want because it's also if you have to present about food security, for example, to say in the sector of agriculture, this is how much was spent. These are the projects. These are the production from the green scheme. 20 banks. This one is two, or one rice. This is what happened. Now, if you just present the two green schemes and their results, one may also want to ask a question to say, what about others? Is it unavailability of data, or is it intentionally omission, or is it because of time? Because when the president is defining her priorities, she put her soldiers in front, which in this time is cabinet and ministers, to say, in terms of food security, this is where we are driving into. In terms of finance, this is where we are driving into. In terms of trade, this is where we are driving into. And one expect in 2026, midterm budget review, in the time where we speak more on monitoring and evaluation, to have more data.
To have invested more in monitoring and evaluation to get that data.
Yeah, to have more data that are coming out from those things. Because one may also want to see to say, because you want to track progress. You want to see that the bus that is moving toward 2030, the bus that is called the NDP 6, is it at gear 1 or 2?
No, is it roadworthy?
No, but is it roadworthy? But movement matters.
No, roadworthy determines you to be there.
Yeah. Yes. No. It's a very good question.
Yeah.
And also to say the mechanic that is it's a very good thought to say the mechanic that is testing the ability of that bus to move, which is monitoring and evaluation to say at what pace are we still at the service station, are we moving 20 kilometers per hour, and are we supporting the driver who is the president, or we are disturbing him? Those are some of the questions that we need to ask ourselves. Because if everybody is moving to 2030, we must be one way or the other understand that we are moving this direction. But if we are fragmented, somebody is looking through the window, somebody texting to us, the traffic's there.
Yeah.
And all these things.
Like that thing that happened to me on Sunday morning.
Yeah.
The guy opens up his window. Is that the traffic?
Yeah.
I'm like, whatever, bruh.
Yeah, because if we don't get what you want to get in the midterm budget review, it can give a face of you can mostly predict 2029. I don't want to say 2030. You can mostly predict 2029, because if we get into this midterm budget review and we don't have all the enough data, I don't want to say everything, enough data that are giving us a picture, then you can easily predict 2029.
Then we
realize that you have a problem.
And there's a gap of 2 years between 2026.
Yeah,
2029.
Yeah, that is exactly what I wanted to say. Even in the sector of energy,
alone.
You can go back. The financial sector is the most debated part. To say, why at the best time in Africa, where other countries are developing their economy, when other countries' economies are growing, are thriving, even those which had 20 years of sanctions, is the time that Namibia economy is growing very slowly. Somebody must really be concerned to say, why at the best time, even if you have best greenfield investment, you are still growing very slowly?
I'm also going to an event next week.
Yeah, those are some of the things that we need to
that will give an indication of that.
Ask us to say no. We
it's a Robin Chevron event.
So what is really happening? Who has the money? Who has the money? And who is sabotaging the development?
Let's substitute the word sabotage.
No. Just to say, who is a barrier in achieving what you want?
It's us Namibians. I'll be honest with you, David. That report still haunts me and Helmut.
Yeah.
The one of the Standing Committee for Capital Projects, when they went to look at
scab report. Yeah. And then they asked the one counselor in, was it Kunene? Kunene or Ochozon Juba? They asked the guy, so what do you think about the projects, the capital projects in your region? The response was, what projects?
Yeah.
So you can't technically say that person is sabotaging because maybe that person just does not know. Or they have seen, but they don't know what the understanding of capital projects probably is. Meaning, we don't know if there was a refresher course given to that counselor.
No, you know, I just want to judge. I will give you an opportunity to continue. No?
Yeah.
The position of authority, especially at this point in time,
yeah.
is not me,
yeah.
just a junior guy. It's not an internship.
Yeah.
You can't be a counselor and you say you don't know, you are trying. You must be, you hit the ground running already. We don't need to have these things. Mm-hmm. If you have a problem, there are a lot of training opportunities that you can do. But you cannot be a counselor. I don't know what's the difference between a capital project and also a community project.
No, really?
No, David, those things exist.
Yeah.
I know they exist, but let's look at commercial.
Do you need toiletries and household cleaners? You won't get it cheaper than a U-Save up to the 7th of June. Get 250 mm jars of Vaseline for only $25. Smell fresh with Playboy roll-on deodorant for just $18.99. Get 2 kilograms of Surf hand washing powder for just $49.99. Get 750 mm Sunlight dishwashing liquid for $28.99. And get 2 boxes of Cares Maxi sanitary pads for only $12.99. U-Save. Where else?
Welcome back. We are 15 minutes left to, there's 15 minutes left to the hour of 7. You are listening to Home Run, that's with Helmut, Dwight, and David here on Eagle FM. And we are looking at basically the recently concluded nuclear bill. Not nuclear family, nuclear bill.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, David, you were saying?
Yeah, just to continue with what I was indicating.
To congruation.
I don't know, not conclusion yet.
Oh, no, that was, women's conference of last year.
Yeah, just to emphasize on to say, apart from the obvious, apart from what we have been doing, especially either is drafting of policies, either is driving economic priorities, particularly looking at a lot of data coming out, a lot of research data which are coming out now. What is new? Because what is new is what's going to change things. What is new in this aspect? What was done? What was done new in this consultation that is different from other policies? And what is what guarantee do we have that this policy is not going to, this draft, this bill is not going to be like any other which are drafted, but they are still there.
And then they just gather
laying dormant.
And is the lawmaking process in Namibia catching up with the needs of the people?
Oh no. Apparently, the legal expert at the workshop yesterday cited that she counts at least that there's probably 30 bills out there somewhere.
But the one which went through, apart from the budget bill,
the appropriation bill.
Yeah, the appropriation bill. They said, I think mental health went through.
Yeah.
Then still trying.
Mental health went through, but access to information didn't go through.
Talk about petroleum.
Cyber security and data protection, where are they?
Talk about petroleum. Petroleum amendment bill.
Cyber security, access to information.
Petroleum is serious issues. Access. Petroleum is positioning power to the president.
No, it's to me, it's not an issue of where the power is.
Yeah.
It's an issue of your contribution. If you don't want it to be there, what is your contribution? Because it's up there for debate.
No, but the thing is, there was no public engagement to ask the public. We are disqualified immediately. That's the mistake specifically that the presidency and Minister Amutse made. They presented something at the National Assembly level. Now, when Helmut and I went through the particular eco-dialogue discussion about the developments of what the civil society contributed on that part, remember the one legal lady that said, what happens if something goes wrong in the exercise of the duties of whatever, let's say
the act is going to be regulating and
contained to that act. Well,
now you'll have to summon the president.
Yeah.
will the assembly have the power to assemble the to summon the president to come and explain in front of the parliament? And
maybe we just have to summon the commissioner. But look, the thing is, as a Namibian, just an ordinary Namibian that wants to participate in the economic and political activities of his country,
yeah.
I'm of the idea that that is a terrible idea. Mm. Now, as a comedian, I'm loving it because I know all the corruption allegations will give me a lot of content to talk about. Look, the thing is, that is going to raise a lot of question. Mm. And it has already raised a lot of question. Now corruption allegation, family affiliation and allocation has already flying rampant. It will be very difficult to defend defend themselves.
I don't have a problem with a debate. I have a problem of what are we doing about it?
Yeah.
Because you need that to become a global player in Southern Africa in terms of oil and gas. As you speak about, without it, you will not have what you want to get into.
Mm-hmm.
Because you need the law that allow you to do certain things.
Yeah.
The question is that whether it go back. Whether it's debated on the other way, why can't it be prioritized? Because those are national interests to say, okay, this is what the president is saying. What are you saying? This is what the cabinet is saying. This is where they are standing. Because when the AMTSA came in, that was, I think, the first thing that he has to do
to present it.
Then the question is, let us not pack this one. Why can't you deal with this one and say, okay,
let's see through and then move on to the next one.
Then we prioritize it. Mm. Then we see where we are going to meet each other.
Yeah.
Because there are things that we are not happy with. And when Parliament of the people is not happy with certain things, what can they do about it?
Yeah.
Because that is the one thing to say, not only to debate, to say I reject it.
Mm-hmm.
You reject it with what basis?
Yeah.
What do you want to do?
I think that is where the explanation now, should have been, if you ask me from a consultation standpoint that, you know what, we are shifting this office from the Ministry of Mines or this responsibility from the Ministry of Mines, to the President's office for this and this reasons.
Yeah.
No, I hear you.
But the concern that I'm even now realizing from obviously attending so many public stakeholder engagements on a bill is that this is one of the few bills that never came down to our level. Why are we going to talk to the country about nuclear that nobody understands? Very few people understand. But when it comes to oil and gas, it was immediately just at the National Assembly level. Why did the president and the minister submit it at that level?
Yeah, and the one thing, you know what I'm scared of?
Yeah.
I don't really have an interest who is going to be in charge, who's not going to be in charge. My problem is when you have a vacuum in terms of the law.
Yeah.
This international cooperation, they're going to play us and dribble us.
Oh, big
because
time.
Because we are not in order.
Yep.
Because the IAEA
has been dribbled a million times.
No.
They have been the football that dribbles the country.
Yeah, because if the prediction of first oil is coming 2029, that is what experts are saying, and we start drilling, and we are still debating who is who.
Yeah.
You are going to war, and me and you are fighting who is going to be the commander, who is going to be here.
Mm.
But people, they are going to defeat you because international corporations, and people must know this to say, they are here to do business.
Yeah.
They are not here to take us from poverty. It's us to meet them and say, this is what we want.
Yeah.
Because if we are not organized and we are saying just because you are from this political party,
I
have to show you, then it will come. Let's look at 2029.
Yeah.
Because when you look at 2029, people think it's far.
No.
But you are already in December right now.
Yeah.
You are already in December. Because they are going to play us big time and we are going to mess up the country that we are supposed to put in order when you have this opportunity. The question is that if Parliament cannot prioritize that, if they cannot, because there's always something that we have to meet halfway.
Yeah.
There's always something that we have to meet halfway to say, no, this is what we want. This is what the majority of Parliament is saying. This is how you can look at that power. Maybe come up with independent institutions too to look at that aspect. Maybe reporting just to Parliament because you know that Parliament is the most powerful institution in Namibia. Because you are making all the laws that are used.
It has to be.
Yeah. It,
No, it is. It's still.
Yeah, no, but that's what I'm saying. It's
it's the most powerful institution.
Because that bill, Minister Mutsa went to National Assembly, not to National Council. The actual power is National Council.
No, I hear you.
Because National Council are the guys that we had to go and cover last year, 2025. Yeah. And the Gen Zs, just saying, rubbing it in your face, guys, you guys didn't show up. So, us, we voted the millennials. So, at that level, the National Council has to then understand what impacts does it have on the representatives of the country.
Yeah.
The dimension that pops up here, we also have to understand, political gimmicks for what they are.
Mm.
You know, you make strategic moves.
Yeah.
The minister, the president is making strategic moves. Let's be honest, guys.
It's part of your expertise.
No, but let me just cut you, ne?
Mm.
You can't be at a national level and we are not strategic.
Yeah.
But.
Or you don't have strategy.
You don't have a strategy.
But you'd be dribbling yourself.
But strategies are in two things. Yeah. The political strategy can be beneficial to the nation. But when somebody says, no, that guy is very good with politics, he's a political strategist.
Mm.
People think, no, you play, you dribble people. But if you make your strategic move, because you are dealing with human beings and you are dealing with power, if you are dealing with strategic move at a high level, if it's with good intention and it's going to serve the country, why can't you look at that strategy?
Yeah.
Because that's what we look at it. That's what we look at. But one thing that we also see, and I don't want to be misquoted, when you look at
when you look at
African politics,
there
are two kinds of strategies. The success of most of the African politics is the strategy of winning elections.
Mm.
But the strategy of implementing a developmental plan is very difficult. Just look around you. You look at Zimbabwe, you look at South Africa, you look at any country in Africa.
Namibia even.
A politician can stand up and can have a political strategy to say, I'm going to win this.
Mm. Yeah.
Then they win it.
Yeah.
But why can't you look at the developmental aspect and say
to transition from that win
to win for
us all.
Yeah. So to employ the strategy into developmental implementation.
They might be different, but they're all strategies. You have ways of implementing them.
Yeah.
Step by step.
Mm.
Somebody can even calculate for 5 years. You just wake up, the guy is already a vice president. But the person has been doing all these moves and all these moves.
Mm.
But why can't you do that when you become a CEO of an institution or when you become a minister so that you can, implement what is good for the people?
Or be in a position to...
Yeah.
It's part of the strategies. You also know that.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. Something that would sound good to the benefit of Namibia, what we've also seen, for example, happen across the African continent, something that is made to benefit us, the society, which has been the overall, the underlying theme that I've been driving specifically. I want to see a Namibian society that we don't need to rely on owning a car.
Yeah, yeah.
Where systems work for you regardless, doesn't matter who is president or mayor or minister or... Systems just work.
Yeah.
There is faith in systems.
Yeah.
But we have been through elections, through political coverage, realized, and I hope the other Namibians also realize this, that it seems like the political gimmicks that take place undermines the goal.
The national goal.
The national goal.
Yeah.
Because, look, Vision 2030 can sound good and all, but how difficult is it to basically afford food in 2026 when President Nyoma at the time in 2000 came out with Vision 2030.
So what we are saying is everyone is going to have in Vision 2030 until then we're just going to starve our way to Vision 2030.
Potentially.
Nice.
I had to just end it there. potentially.
We're just a minute and a few seconds left to the hour of 7. So it's wrapping it up time with the nuclear bill. Now, look, all I'm going to say is nuclear energy has been given a bad name by things like Fukushima, Chernobyl, then you have Hiroshima and that. But the thing is, the energy itself has a lot of, industrial use and medicinal use. So this is basically the direction that Namibia is, is trying to use this technology, not to make booms, but, nuclear and energy generation, and we need nuclear for energy generation and for medicinal use, and it has a lot of health applications already, which is also already used in Namibia.
Mm.
So. Now, for me, like you just pointed out, David, you know, the regulation is a good start. So let's just see where we end up from here.
Yeah, I think let's just be, apart from being positive, I like what I see in Namibia regarding the data. I think institutions are starting respecting the data-driven decision. You see a lot of reports coming out, particularly understanding how things are working, especially up to date.
We need a labor one.
Yeah, I was very happy with today, especially financial inclusion. Although the results are not positive, those are things that our leaders need to see. The same thing with lawmaking, the same thing with drafting. Let's track progress to say this law has been here. Was it productive? Let us amend it. Let us do what we can do to make sure that we reach where we want to get it. But the numbers, they do not lie. Let's look at that moving forward. Yes.
On my side, guys, before the ad break, let's see each other again, same time, same place. Stay tuned for the next program after the break. Adios.